This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So wait, when it fades down, that means the show is happening. So I guess that means I'm doing a show now, huh? That means this is the best show. Well, this show will start. Is it on now?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm so glad you told me that, because I was about to do one of those facing the crowd moments. Best show audience, stupid. Everybody's an idiot. Are you kidding? They're all morons. That mic was live. What? Anytime there's a mic, you should make sure you're not saying something you don't want someone to hear. Because microphones have a sneaky way of capturing that sound and potentially making it so other people can hear it. Be careful, everybody. One thing you don't have to be careful with, though, is the best show. As we're back again, here we are. Look at us. December 2020. Closing out the greatest year in the history of Earth. We're all doing it together. No. That was a pretty bad year, right? Good year, bad year, whatever. I'm going to say this. I found out last week, this Dudio, who's one of the producers on the show, he was watching me the whole time while I'm doing the show. Do you believe that? Wrap your head around that. Guy's watching me from Zoom whole time. No idea. It's like, hey, man, I was watching you on Zoom. I caught some of that Zoom action. You're sitting there. So you're scratching your chin a whole lot. I'm like, yeah. It's like, just saying. It's like, I didn't know. I didn't know I was on Zoom. This guy's watching me the whole time.
I mean, honestly, like, we're watching you right now.
Like Hyder in the House. It was like Hyder in the House or that Bryan Cranston movie where he hid in his garage and his family was like, he's gone. Nobody knows where he is. He was watching everyone from the garage. Boy, that's a great movie. That was a good one. How many Oscars did that win? Well, I'm going to tell you, tonight we win some Oscars. That's right. The best show is going to win a bleeping Oscar. You know why? Because we got a great show for you tonight. Tonight we're going to do some, what is it, Sequel Mania? Sequel Mania. And what is Sequel Mania? Simple. You call up with a movie or a TV show, and we'll figure out how you'd reboot it or sequelize it or do whatever to it. We'll figure it out for any property, but don't call with like undoable ones that are like gonna be like sensitive. Don't do that. Don't call, go with the Schindler's List. Don't do that. That's not the spirit of the thing. It's a fun show. We're just here to have fun. If this was a Target, we're in the toy aisle. in the toy store, in the Target of life, best shows the toy aisle. Maybe housewares also. But when it comes to housewares, not even like the, be like the you go to the housewares, it'd be like the toilet, scrubber section. That's it. Toy aisle, maybe housewares, also perhaps the snack aisle where they have their own, in-house brand of, trail mix. That one little spot right off the corner of the aisle. Target loves their trail mix. And then they're like, we got a one called Monster. And then there's one called Peanut Butter Monster. People really hiking, eating that stuff. Can you imagine you're hiking around? Get a stomach ache around the woods. Eating trail mix. We're on the trail. We're hiking. I need a little bit of energy. Let me eat this bag of M&Ms with some raisins. It's basically what you're eating. Yeah, how'd your hike go? Well, it was going pretty good. Then I felt like I needed a little burst of energy. So I had some trail mix. And then I had to sit down on a log and hold my stomach. And then the ranger found me. It was humiliating. But other than that, the hike was outstanding. And we also have on the show tonight, Meryl Marco. This is a comedy legend. She's done so many bleeping things. You wouldn't even wrap your head around you. You've done a fraction of what she's done. On her worst day, she's done 10 times as much as you. She's got a new book called We Saw Scenery, The Early Diaries of Meryl Marco. And we're going to talk to her about that and more. But now, theme. Everybody, how are you here on this Tuesday night? My name is Tom. I'm the host of The Best Show, as per usual. And we've got a great show for you tonight. And yeah, man. Sequelize it. No, not sequelize it. Sequel Mania. Got that coming up. Meryl Marco coming up. One that we just heard from Gene Clark, his hit single, Los Angeles. He's one of the all-time greats and one of the people that overcame the two first name scenario, where they're both relatively rough first names. Fade it on out. Yeah, it's relatively hard to navigate if your name's Gene or your name is Clark. But you got Gene and Clark. Yeah, that's a tricky one. But he did it. Clark Gene would he be as successful if his name was Clark Gene? Probably about 10 years ago on the show, and that's how long we've been doing the show. I see all these newcomers with their podcasts, and suddenly you find out that the dad on the Wonder Years has a podcast, and then you find out that everybody's got one, and they all are blabbing away. Used to be a little more special. Till every half-wit and dunce decided that I can do that. Can you? You can? Really? I don't know. I didn't even listen. I can't even listen to these shows no more. Because it's like a hobby now. It's like fox hunting or fencing, some sort of. Well, not either of those things, actually. Why would I say that? No, it's a kind of thing. Everybody thinks they can do it. But about 10 years ago, we did a topic where it was trying to figure out if you took different people's names and altered them just a teeny tiny bit, would the person still seem... would they still be the same? Would you still look at, like, if it was like Jimi Hendrix became Jim Hendrix? It's different, right? We should do that again. It's a fun topic. So many fun topics. And see, that's the kind of thing that these other people can't come. The dad on Wonder Years is not going to come up with that. Tell you, if that guy does actually do a podcast, I'm going to throw up. The dad on the Wonder Years. Who's got the most egregious podcast? Who's the biggest carpetbagger in the biz, Brett? Come on, Brett. Well, give me a name.
You know, there was that one this year that was, Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes all together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, come on, guys. That's a little, that feels like too much.
No, I'd say all those guys. And those guys all seem perfectly fine. They seem like nice guys. And Sean Hayes, actually, not only, you'd think with a name like Sean Hayes, it's actually the Hollywood Handbook is Sean and Hayes. And Sean Hayes, That's his strongest connection to podcasting, is that he brings to mind the two hosts of Hollywood Handbook. But God bless him. Those guys are fine, I'm sure. I think. I don't know. Yeah, they're fine. I know Will Arnett's a nice guy. But you know what? You'd see me crossing the street, putting on a funny hat and playing a character. Maybe it's high time I start acting, huh? Huh, actors talking into a microphone? Maybe it's high time I start acting. What are you going to do then? I start acting. Well, I could act. Oh, boy, I bet you I could act. Yeah, look out. Yeah. I saw him go that way. I saw where the part like that. I need to commandeer your car. Yes, officer. Like, that'll be me. Yes, officer. Then we'll get a little, we'll grow out, the scope a little bit. That'll be 250. Diet Dr. Pepper and a candy bar, $3.99. Then we'll get to that. I'll start nailing that down. Then I just need a scene where I'm just like, now what's the next scene? A customer in a diner or something. Excuse me. These eggs are cold. I can't eat this. Then I get above that, above the five, because it's five and under, five lines or under. I get over five with a good diner scene. Then what? Then next thing you know, I'm on stage. Alas, poor. Someone, I knew him well. Then I'm just doing the bard on stage next. Yeah, then these podcasters will say, oh, what happened? I got my job's gone. Yeah, podcaster took it. He's acting up a storm. He's taking your gigs. Turnabout, Shelby, fair play. On a serious note, I would like to mention that there is someone in New York, the friend of a lot of people who know the show, Sam Jayne, J-A-Y-N-E is his last name, the front man of the band Love Is Laughter. He's missing, and you should check it out on social media. I think if you just search Sam Jayne, last name J-A-Y-N-E, you can get some information on it. And if you have any knowledge about it, that's worth checking out. A lot of people really care about him and love him and are hoping he's okay. So if you can check out the information, I guess it's Chevy Tahoe is something that, that people are trying to locate, then the authorities are trying to locate. So yes, that's, if you're in New York, that's what it's, please check it out and see if you have any insight potentially. Yeah. So hopefully he's okay. So let's start the show. Pat, we got any calls?
Full phones.
Give me a good one. Well, give me one that's going to start us off just like, and it's going to be like, now we're cooking.
That's people trying to locate.
Best show.
Hey, this is Mike in Minneapolis.
Mike in Minneapolis. What's up, Mike?
Not much. I had one for the topic.
The topic being sequel mania.
Yes.
What do you got for me, Mike? And how are you, by the way? How are things in Minneapolis?
Well, it's getting colder, working from home, growing my hair out and getting weird. I don't know.
And what is work for you? What does work look like?
I do coding, medical coding for a hospital.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Tap, 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 right? Tap, tap, tap.
That's right. Looking at another monitor.
And are you listening to things while you do it? Are you able to multitask with that? Can you play music or?
I do. I listen to podcasts and music at various times, not simultaneously.
Sure. Now, what's a good podcast you like to listen to?
Well, Double Threat's a good one.
Of course,
one.
There you go. That was the right answer. That was a trick question. Okay, so Double Threat. What else? What other ones that aren't ones that I'm involved in?
I've been catching up on old episodes of the Flagrant Ones recently.
Of the what now?
The Flagrant Ones.
Oh, the flagrant ones. That's the one that Hayes and Sean do, the basketball one with Carl Tart. That is a great show.
It is. And as for music, I've been listening to the new Neil Young archives.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing.
I'm building up to it. I'm not ready yet. Truly not ready yet.
Right. What have you been listening to?
A lot of Velvet Underground lately. And then I tweeted this thing where I was like, who's the best American band? And I think it's Velvet Underground. And then people were like, well, who do you think? And I didn't put any judgment on it. I put no judgment on it. I wasn't saying like, don't say Blink 182 because you look stupid. I didn't say anything like that. So then all these people giving me the business back. Oh, the great American rock band with John Cale, the Welsh John Cale. Yeah, I didn't start the band in Wales. It's a New York band. And then he got bounced halfway through the run, and they still made two more classics without him. Right. People think I don't know. Oh, like I see some of the actuallys. John Cale is Welsh. Is not American. It's like, yeah, last time I checked, that's a New York band that happened to have a dude who'd been living in New York for years at that point in it. That's New York. Ugh, Mike.
It'd be like disqualifying the Talking Heads because David Byrne's Scottish.
Well, they should disqualify Talking. First of all, it's Talking Heads, not the Talking Heads.
My apologies.
But they're also, look, Talking Heads, people think I hate Talking Heads. I don't hate them. I like them very much. I think they're great. Do I think they're the best? No, I don't. But I say this to all these people. Oh, Talking Heads are my favorite band ever. Where have you been the last 30 years? David Byrne's playing his thing, his music in a phone booth. And then now all of a sudden everybody's, oh, I always love Talking Heads. Where were you?
Were you at the show in Red Bank, New Jersey that he filmed for a DVD like 30 years ago?
I was not. No, I was not there 30 years ago in Red Bank. So, okay, what do you got for me, Mike? Give me something good.
All right. Well, since... sadly, the Kardashians have announced that they're ending their television show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it's time for them to do their Head movie.
Yes, that's a good point. The way the Monkees did Head, the film that destroyed the franchise.
Right. And yeah. So because they all... I've only seen the Kardashians when my teenage son has been watching it, but presumably they all have different sort of personalities that come into conflict. So if they do their Head, then throughout the movie, they can all sort of swap personalities, yes. You know, in each scene, the way that the Monkees did. And instead of the execution of the Viet Cong soldier, I'm sure there's plenty of scenes of unrest and everything from this past summer that can be cut in jarringly at different times.
Yes, make it of the age is what you're saying. Make it timely. Yes.
Right.
Oh, no, I think that's the way to go. If it's time to reboot Keeping Up with the Kardashians, I think they need, before they could ever consider that, they need to blow it up and then start over again. And right. Then they can have a fun, nostalgic thing afterwards, but they need to burn the whole thing to the ground.
Right.
And then people would say, Kardashians just made some art.
Right. Mike. And you even get, because again, they're swapping their own roles. You know, they could comment on the Pepsi commercial, mm-hmm. juxtaposed with the scenes of the unrest. And then they could even bring Trump into it, you know, meeting him in the Oval Office to try to get people, you know, pardoned or whatever. You know, so there'd be a lot of star power.
I think Mr. Trump would be, I always love when they say the, right now, we've talked about this before. It never stops being fascinating to me when people are so weirdly deferential, where they talk about the guy that owns the Patriots, Robert Kraft. They're like, Mr. Kraft said, Mr. Kraft. Maybe so, like, what is this guy? The guy's a rich guy. He's got a pile of money.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live at the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
He also, he got caught getting the old, right? So but there's Mr. Trump says it, Mr. Trump. It's like, this guy's the biggest, the most crass, gross human alive. And people like this respectful, terms to just, to identify him. Mr. Trump. I do like Don Jr. though. I think he's got something. I tell you, Forever Dog signs any Trump to a podcast, I don't know what I'll do.
Be the first one on it.
Wait, that is what I would do? No. The first one, they'll have some guest on. Ted Nugent will be on.
Maybe Conan will get one of them on his podcast, and then they can be on Earwolf.
Yeah, I might take that's the other one, Conan. Brayette pointed out that one with the guy, the Arrested Development crew. They're doing their show. The Conan one, God love him. He's always been nice to me. Nice guy. Won a comedy favorite of mine for a long, long time. But this guy would leave podcasts in a second. If you told him that they could expand out the TV show, and he never has to do a podcast again, he's gone. He's gone. He'll never boot up an H6 ever again. Now, that's what I says. And look, they all can do it. Best Show's been here before him. We'll probably be here there after them. They'll all come and go, and I'll be talking to the mic, the mush mouth, the way the old folk get, right? We hear those dentures clattering.
I'm occasionally falling onto the table.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I hope you're doing great, and thank you for the call. You got things started.
Add two more people to the cast. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Go. Yeah.
I was thinking Catherine Bigelow could direct.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I like that.
And then, you know, that Congress guy from Texas, Dan Crenshaw, that just made his own little movie trailer campaign commercial. He could be one of the villains.
Yeah, he seemed cool. And it's another person that Saturday Night Live awesomely gave airtime to. It's like, who's next? Who's next for Saturday Night Live? Pol Pot? They gonna get him at the update desk? Okay, well, those are good suggestions, Mike.
Well, thank you, Tom.
I wish you all the best.
And also you.
Peace be with you. Is he gone? He's gone. Done. Oh. Oh, so we got a good call from Mike there. Nice guy. So I've been listening to this Andy Warhol, audiobook, right? This, thing, this Andy Warhol audiobook where he's, it's like about, it's a biography. And it's, how long is it? How many hours do you think it is? Everybody guess who's on how many hours they think this audiobook is. Jason?
23.
Pat?
Hold on, I'm screening a call.
Oh, guy's working. Don't mess with him. Brett, you have an idea?
I'll go a little higher. I'll say this is a 45-hour audiobook.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'm just going to say what it is. Yeah, it's like 44 hours long. Pat, Brett just...
Brett, was it 44?
Sorry, 44. No, Pat got it. Oh, Pat, you got it. You did it. Perfect. Right. No, it's, and this guy reads, I'll say this. First of all, thankfully, the book starts, it doesn't start with his great grandparents, which is so many of these biographies. It just starts like the year's 1844. And it's like, I don't care. When does he do the cans? The cans. Where are the cans? And then, so thankfully it starts with him and not with his great, great, great grandfather. That's a relief. The reader of the audio book has a certain tendency to, when they want to interpret something that Andy said, they do this voice that sounds kind of like the Dice voice when he's doing the wife voice, where he'll be like, Andy was screen printing instead of painting, which was very controversial for the high art world. Then he's like, I thought I would just screen printed things because that's the way you could make more of them. It's like it's Andrew Dice Clay's wife. But it's an interesting audiobook. I'm enjoying it. He's, I will say this. And this is a marketing faux pas. He did those Campbell soup cans, right? The soup cans. And the people over at Chunky really missed an opportunity to poach him for a commercial. Right? If they were just like, he's like, and I'm just going to do the way the guy does the voice on the audiobook. He's like, it's me, Andy Warhol. Everybody knows me for soup cans for a certain brand of soup cans, but I decided I like Chunky. And then he pulls a sheet off of a canvas and unveils a Chunky soup can. And then there's a line outside the door at the grocery store. People can't get enough Chunky soup. They really missed an opportunity there. Acting thing I said I could do. I think I could do the acting thing. Art would be a little more difficult, I believe. I think art would be a little trickier. I could probably do art the way, Drip Man did him. What's that guy's name? Drip Man? Anyone?
Jackson Pollock?
Jackson Pollock, yes. The way I call him Drip Man. Cause basically this is how this guy's deal worked. He goes, he buys a canvas, goes to the paint store, says, give me one can of everything, starts dumping it all over the canvas. And then they hand him $1 million. It's a pretty sweet deal. I could probably do like a drip man thing. What's his name again?
Jackson Pollock.
Jackson Pollock. Okay. I'm going to still call him Drip Man. I could do that. I remember one time I went to this museum, right? And then, there were all these, this art expert was in front of this, this mounted, water fountain in the wall. He's saying, well, you'll notice the purpose behind this is that it's a comment on, on the consumerism of the world and the stupidity of flyover. It was a real water fountain. He didn't even know it was a water fountain. And then a little kid went up and started drinking water from it. And then everybody laughed at him. That's the art world. That didn't happen. Pat, we got anybody? Got any lines in particular for me?
Let's go with line three.
Let's go with line three.
Hey, what's going on, Tom?
Not a whole lot. Welcome to the best show. To whom am I speaking?
This is Blake from Richmond, Virginia.
Your name again? Sorry?
Blake from Richmond, Blake. Virginia.
Okay, like Robert Blake, another great two-named person.
Yeah. Since we last spoke, you gave me the business on Uncut Gems and how I wasn't ready to see it.
Did you finally get ready?
Yeah, I saw it.
And did you like it?
Yeah, it honestly blew me away. I loved almost everything about it.
Were you scared during parts of it?
A little bit, but I guess the second sequence with the doctor scene was like one of the funniest sight gags I've seen in a while.
Yeah, no, it's a masterwork, a masterwork. No, I love it.
So I got one for the topic. I don't want to clog your tubes up.
Okay. No pun intended. So Uncut Gems reference.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a kind of bare bones, idea for this, sequel, but, the idea is it's another installment of Albert Brooks's Defending Your Life.
Okay.
But instead of Albert Brooks, the person who's on trial for their afterlife is, Wayne Grow from Heat.
Now wait, say that again now. Who's on trial?
The character Wayne Grow from Heat.
Okay. And so he's got to go through the same thing that Albert Brooks went through in Defending Your Life.
Yeah. He's going through all the same sort of trials and tribulations and whatnot. But since we know, who Wayne Grow is and what Wayne Grow has done, we ultimately know what's going to end up happening to him. But to see him go through all of the different like mini trials and whatnot of the horrible things he's done. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would be a pretty funny idea.
No, that would be good. I like that. I like the idea of completely subverting so it would be Heat 2 : Defending Your Life 2.
Yeah.
Right? Heating your life or defending your heat? What should it be?
I kind of like defending your heat a little bit more.
Okay. Defending your heat, : Heat 2 / Defending Your Life 2.
Yeah. And since Rick Torn is unfortunately no longer with us, mm-hmm. I feel like the best substitute for that sort of like trial character, like I guess the afterlife attorney character, would be Fred Melamed.
You like Fred Mel? You're a Melahead. You're a Medhead. Yeah,
I'm a Cy Abelman man.
Yeah, you're a Cy Abelman man. No, I like this. You gave it some good thought. get Melamed some work, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He seems like he could be a little bit of a pain, I'm going to say.
Melamed or Wangro? Well, I guess we know Wangro.
Melamed. Melamed seems like he could be exacting. Not that he's a jerk. I could just picture him being just like, Melamed needs to do it the way Melamed does it, you know? And when you don't do it, Melamed, I could picture him being on set and like complaining about like the craft service.
Yeah. What about a more neutral attorney and get like Michael Stuhlbarg?
Well, you're just going all the way into a serious man now.
Yeah, no, I'm pulling out all the fixtures.
Would you say that's your favorite Coen Brothers movie?
No, but I will say that's like slowly crept up the list. Like every single time I watch it, I still think my favorites are probably The Man Who Wasn't There in Fargo and No Country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You put it at fourth, maybe? Fourth? No, you're going to go lower than fourth. I might put A Serious Man at the top two. Maybe number one, maybe number two. Yeah.
Yeah. The things that kind of like keep pushing that up the ladder with me is just the, I don't know, existential dread of it. Like, I don't know.
It's pretty bleak.
Way that, it's pretty bleak, but I like how there's a sense of humor throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. You're a good old fashioned med head, and I appreciate the call, Blake.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Bye. Did he call me friend? I like that. Pat, give me another one, please.
Yeah, you got it.
Hello, best show.
Doom, 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 zigga-da-doom, doom. People try to put him down, talking about Darren Ploppleton, just because he rules this town. Talking about Darren Ploppleton. D-plop in the house.
D-plop in the house. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Been a long time, right?
It has been. And let me just say, for people who might be new to the best show, the guy on the line right now is somebody I've known, a longtime friend, and somebody who's been a coworker with me over at Consolidated Cardboard for years, Darren Ploppleton. How you doing, Darren? It's been a while since you've been on the show, and it's been a while at work also. I don't think I've seen you work in weeks.
It's true. And, I don't know. Do you have a couple minutes for me to fill you in?
Sure.
Oh my God. Where to begin? Look, this is hard to talk about. I'm not proud of this, and you're probably not going to believe it, but I was totally swept up into Trump world for a few weeks, basically until I came to my senses.
Really?
Yeah.
That is so, I would never have thought that in a million years. What happened?
Well, it's the weirdest thing. The day of that Four Seasons landscaping thing that happened in Philly,
mm-hmm.
I was doing my monthly Tasty Cake run to Philadelphia. And look, basically, I've got a guy in Northeast Philly. I don't know. Let's call him, Roy. And this guy, Roy, every couple of months, he liberates a skid of these super small batch Yingling flavored Tasty Cakes. Super small batch. And then he sells them to, you know, to us true connoisseurs throughout the tri-state area.
Mm-hmm. Well, Roy, I think I have an idea. I think I know the Roy you're talking about.
Really? He's very, very low key, and he doesn't really like to make a big deal about himself. I can't imagine we're thinking of the same guy.
Well, I mean, this guy is not exactly the most low key guy, but he is a guy who would, would figure out a way to liberate a skid of snack cakes.
Okay. So he's usually up to something. Is that right?
Yeah. He's usually got his fingers in a lot of pies. Like, well, literally.
Literally.
Based on what you just said. Yeah. In that case, that is one of the pies he would have his fingers in.
That's true. So, all right. So we're doing the transaction, you know, on the QT. And then this guy, Roy, I'm using these air quotes, he gets a call from none other than Rudy Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
I swear. And Roy, they chat for a little bit, and it gets kind of heated. And, you know, so Roy basically recommends holding that press conference at Four Seasons Landscaping in Northeast Philly. And, you know, I got nothing else going on, so I tag along.
Okay.
At some point during this whole thing, Rudy has to take a squeege, and he goes into one of those porta-johns,
mm-hmm.
and he gets locked in. And Tom, you know me, you know, and through all these weird circumstances, I have been locked in and escaped from an astounding number of porta-johns over the years. So basically I tell him not to panic, and I walk him through the steps to get out, you know, and there are very, very specific steps you take, and basically he did get out, and he's beyond grateful. And he says, you know what? We're shorthanded down in D.C. We need help, and you're just the guy to help out. So the next thing I know, I'm in a limo heading to Washington, D.C. Isn't that crazy?
That is really weird, because you helped pop Rudy out of a locked porta-john.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And so, Tom, you know me. I'm basically a good dude, right? I mean, I'm not political, but I do like to think that I'm usually on the right side of things in that world. But, oh, my God, I just got caught up in the glamour and the power of it all. And, you know, it was intoxicating.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, I'm in the Oval Office with Trump, Stephen Miller, and Mark Meadows. I'm not lying.
Wow. Really?
Yes. And Tom, you're never going to believe this, but those three guys are all massive Best Show fans.
What?
I swear, they know all the bits. Stephen Miller loves the soundboard stuff, and Trump was doing Gary the Squirrel word for word. And it's weird because he really thinks Gary is real, and at one point he's asking me if I could get Gary's pautograph. He actually called it that.
He called it a pautograph.
A pautograph. I've never even heard that word. It's kind of brilliant, isn't it?
It's pretty good. Yeah, I give him credit on that.
Yes. So at one point during this whole thing, Trump gets a call from Marco Rubio, and I swear he gomps him. It was nuts. And then after about half an hour, we're still talking about the Best Show, and Trump gets really quiet.
Uh-huh.
And he puts his head back, and he just starts staring at the ceiling, and he just goes, wonder what ever became a Spike.
Really?
And yes, and he goes, you know what? Spike really knew showbiz. And then he said at one point he was wanting to make Spike the secretary of showbiz until Jared convinced him that that office doesn't really exist.
Yeah, yeah. The secretary of showbiz.
Yeah, he would have been good for it too, I think.
I think he would have been good. There would have been a lot more doo-wop in the National Registry. And a lot more horror movies.
Right. And who's the actor he was really into? He would have had him over all
John,
the time.
John Wesley Shipp.
And what was he again?
The guy from The Flash.
What? I can't remember what was the Flash a movie or a show?
Well, there was a show that he was on back in like the 90s, I guess. And then there was they brought the Flash back, and John Wesley Shipp did a turn on the new one as well.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, well, he could have been in there in the Oval.
John Wesley Shipp could have been in the Oval Office. Look at that. If only Spike was named Secretary of Showbiz.
I know. And so basically it was my connection to you that helped me get in really good with Trump. And it was so crazy. He instantly recognized my name when Rudy introduced me to him.
Okay.
Nuts. And I told him at one point that, you know, I could probably get him on the show, but that was before this big argument that we had that kind of ended it all.
Wait, what was the big argument?
Well, look, first I want to say, I really didn't do all that much when I was down in D.C. Basically, I was tasked with inventorying Trump's collection of impossibly long neckties and giant pants. But that really only took a week to complete.
To catalog them.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You're doing an inventory, just making sure, you know, he knew exactly how many thousands of these ties he had.
What is his longest tie?
I measured it. It is, let me see if I can remember. It was 13 feet.
13 feet. Cause every once in a while he has a tie that is, what, say that again?
That's just from the knot, down.
So there's a whole, oh my God. Cause once in a while he'll wear a tie where you're like, that tie is so long.
Right.
But I have never seen him wear a tie that would be 13 feet from the knot down.
I know. He calls the ones you described shorties.
Okay.
Yeah, he calls them shorties. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the 13 foot, you know, of course, is a longie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's his longest tie.
That's his longest tie, right. And so after I was done inventorying that stuff, the rest of the time, basically, I was organizing his wacky package collection. He collects.
No.
Yes, yes.
Trump collects wacky packages.
He does, yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
And that's where the argument began.
Okay. What was the argument?
Basically, he wanted me to hold a press conference announcing that it was official that Donald Trump was now the owner of the world's largest collection of wacky packages, and I just couldn't do it because mm-hmm. everybody knows you have the biggest collection.
Yeah. I would put my wacky packages collection up against anybody's.
It's true. It's true. And, yeah. And you know, I told him that, and he was like, no, you got to do it. And I stood my ground, and, you know, sure, you and I have had our ups and downs over the decades, including those 2 years where we didn't speak because you thought I tried to kill you with my son's remote control helicopter, but we're practically family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I outside of a couple moments, family might be strong, but there's a connection there. Yes.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I wouldn't do it. And, you know, it was one of those things. Did I quit or was I fired? You could say both. And so basically that was the end of my adventures in the Capitol. And thankfully, old man Dalrymple didn't even know I was gone from work.
Really? Our boss over at Consolidated Cardboard had no idea.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
Look, I know everyone's saying how sharp old man Dalrymple is for 117, but I do think he's starting to fade a little bit.
Yeah. I guess maybe if I'm being completely honest, I can see it.
I mean, he's good. I've heard he doesn't take that Prevagen stuff. He actually drinks it. Like he gets these hot mugs of it.
Uh huh. rather than in just a medical treatment.
Yeah, he's pounding it. It's his beer, I guess. I don't know. But, so anyway, you know, back to the same old boring grind, but at least I'm not going to go to jail for anything I did during the short time I was down there in Trump land, right? You got to see the positive of it.
Sure, sure. No, that's fair.
Hey, have you seen this Frank Zappa documentary? It's new. It's by either Bill or Ted. I can't remember who did it.
I did see it, yes. I did see the Frank Zappa documentary.
I like that. I had one little thing that I didn't like about it.
What was that?
There was no mention in that entire movie of that kids show that Frank Zappa had in, like, I guess it was like the late 70s, and it was called Condescension Station. Do you remember that?
I don't. I know it wasn't in the documentary. He had a kid's show, huh?
Yeah, and he basically, it was kind of like Mr. Rogers. You know, it takes place in this fictional town, and, you know, the kids learn things, and basically he's the mayor of the town, and basically the title pretty much tells you exactly what,
you know, sure,
what happened. You know, he would kind of talk down to the kids and, you know, kind of make fun of them for not knowing what he knew.
Sure. Was he smoking the entire time?
Oh yeah. And he would try to get the kids to smoke too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing kids don't tend to gravitate toward is the music of Varez.
It's true, yeah, yeah.
Kids generally don't respond that well to the classic, the 20th century classical composer.
No, they sure don't. No, rock on. Yeah. Yeah, the songs that I've been really getting into of his are, oh my God, got my favorites off the top of my head are probably Lonesome Electric Turkey, How the Pig's Music Works. What else? St. Alfonso's Pancake Breakfast. This Town is a Sealed Tuna Sandwich. Jazz Fart, of course. The Duke Regains His Chops. What else? The Girl Wants to Fix Him Some Broth. But my favorite is probably Ian Underwood Whips It Out.
Yeah, those are all classics.
They are. They are. Hey, speaking of classics, this is going to be a new classic. Are you watching this HBO show called Your Honor? It's Bryan Cranston.
Not yet. No, I haven't. I've seen advertisements for it, but I've not watched it.
Oh, rock on. I don't know if I've ever been this nervous watching a TV show. There's so many moments where I had to pause it, you know, because I was so uptight, and I'd go in the other room and do a bunch of push-ups. I'm only on episode 2.
And you're that, it's that stressful.
Oh my God, I can't stand it. Yeah. I don't want to give any spoilers, but, you know, it takes place in New Orleans where pretty much anything goes.
Uh-huh. So you watch it and you get stressed out and then you start doing some push-ups.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, did you see the Bee Gees documentary?
Not yet. I know there's a new Bee Gees documentary coming out. I have not seen it.
Oh, cool. Rock on. I don't know a lot of that super early stuff other than the hits.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good place to start with the early stuff. I know there's one called Spicks and Specks, and I think there's one called, like, Horizontal. Is that right?
Yeah, Horizontal's one. There's one called, is it Odessa? The Bee Gees First is a good one. And I'm blanking out. What is the one album? I think it's called, it's Odessa. I'm getting it wrong. I know I'm getting it wrong, but.
Okay. All right. Rock on. Cool. That's cool. I'm trying to think. There's something else I was going to ask you. I can't remember what it was.
Hey,
it was about yeah.
What is, can I just, Darren, thing that's been happening through the last 15 minutes of our conversation is you keep sliding in, Rock On.
I do?
Yeah. Yeah, you said it about 6 times.
rock on. It's just this cool thing I'm trying out. You know, I think it's time I had a cool catchphrase. You know, like you and get off my phone and get into the hate pit and keep your hands off of my mozzarella.
I don't know if that's one I've said, but that third one, I think I've ever said that, but I don't think I ever said keep your hands off my mozzarella. I don't think I ever said as a catchphrase.
Rock on. What do you think of my catchphrase?
Honestly, I think it's a little contrived.
Huh. Well, my landlord says it's cool.
Your landlord likes how you say rock on?
He does, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, speaking of that Bee Gees documentary, one of the cool things about it, not a spoiler, but they finally name that song a lot of your callers have been asking about all these years. It's the one that goes, oh, girl, bitch, why did you tell me that stuff when you knew I was already upset? It turns out it's this rare B-side, and it's called Love Medicine. I didn't know that.
I've never been able to place that song. That is crazy. So the documentary says that the song is called Love Medicine.
Yes, yeah, and I talked to my landlord about it, and my landlord says that it was left off main course because it was too erotic.
Okay, I wouldn't have pegged that song as being overly erotic, but
I guess there's a whole third verse where like it describes, you know, sexual stuff, so I don't know. It seems very unlike them, but my landlord says that it's real, so hey, speaking of great songs,
mm-hmm.
You played a song on last week's show that was so good. It's maybe the best thing I've ever heard you play on the best show, but I can't remember the name of it. Do you remember like any of the songs you played last week?
What did I play? I played an OC's song. I played their version of European Sun by Velvet Underground. I played that last week. I played a Roy Orbison song. I played the song The Comedians by Roy Orbison. Those are two I know I played.
It's neither of those. This song goes, popcorn bowls, I sure do miss grandma's popcorn bowls.
Yeah, that's a song I've never heard that before until a guy called last week and talked all about popcorn. He sang that song to me last week. I had never heard it before. I guess he said it was like something that one of the members of Aerosmith was trying to push to get on.
Because my landlord was in Aerosmith.
Okay. Cause the guy last week was talking about who's the landlord again?
Rick Dufay?
Yes. The other guy. Yeah. The one of the guys in Aerosmith during one of their off periods, I guess you could say.
Interesting. He must own several properties here in Newbridge. I don't know. That's kind of cool, right? Have a celebrity in town.
Yeah, to have a celebrity landlord in town, huh? Rick Dufay.
Absolutely, yeah. Hey, are you going to the Consolidated Christmas Party next week?
You know, I'm pretty uncomfortable with that. I think things are a little too intense right now with
I agree.
You know. The way things are with trying to be safe.
Yeah, look, I'm all for being cautious, and I'm all for wearing masks. I'm all for social distancing, but I'm lying if I say I'm not tired of old man Dalrymple's extreme PPE. I mean, we have to be the only business in the Quint Cities that has to deal with this spray shield every morning as we enter the workplace, right?
Oh, my God, the spray shield. Is I can't handle it. I mean, how would you describe that for people?
Well, all right, you know how you go, it's straight out of that movie Silkwood. Remember when Meryl Streep was, you know, she played Karen Silkwood, and they worked at the nuclear plant, and they would go through the thing and get tested to see if they, you know, if they were radioactive anyway. And there's that one scene where she is radioactive and she has to take this spray bath, you know, to clean off.
Yeah.
And the morning for us is like that, but we have our clothes on.
Yes, it's just that is they need to figure that out. Cause
and it's like being coated in hand sanitizer.
Everybody, there's more like I guess there's like just such a mildew feel to things. Cause everybody's clothes are soaking wet and the heat is cranked all the way up.
Yeah. Yep.
So it just creates like this thing. It's like laundry that somebody forgot to put in the dryer.
Perfect description. Yes. And we're also probably the only business in town where smoking is allowed inside. So half the people smoke and that gets stuck to it. The smoke, it's sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's troubling.
And what about the mud bath we got to take on the way out to clean it off? It's so messy.
Yeah, and it takes so much time.
Like 2 hours.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, you know what? I talked to his son's young and younger man's Dalrymple, and they both said the only reason we're doing any of this is so we don't get old man Dalrymple sick. That doesn't sound fair, does it?
No, that stinks. That stinks. That's just very, that's weird and, selfish. I don't know why he's coming in, honestly.
He's 117. He looks 130, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy. Look, I guess you heard the news, right? That Brian Detweiler passed on.
Yeah, I did hear that.
So ends the war, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And I just can't believe it's been 35 years since Tommy and the Newbridge Dance Warriors ruled the dance floors of the entire Quin Cities. It seems like yesterday to me.
Okay, well, you know, technically, Darren, it was just the Newbridge Dance Warriors is what we were called, not Tommy and the Newbridge Dance Warriors.
I know, but look. You were the star, you were our leader, and you were the driving force behind the Dance Warriors. Just own it, okay?
I can't. It was a team activity. No.
Oh my God. Man, those were simpler times. You know, we lived by a simple, honest code. You know, number one, you never leave another warrior behind on the dance floor. Number two, nobody dances a slow dance with anyone's ex until a full 14 days after the aforementioned couple's last makeout session. And the big one, the most important one, whoever has the longest rat tail is the leader. And what sucked about that was mine stopped growing halfway down my back, but you were able to wrap yours around your waist. What was it, like 3 times? It was like a belt.
It was kind of like Trump's tie in a way.
And
yeah, it was long.
All the time. What colors would you dye? I loved when you would do that. You'd come to school and it'd be like a new color.
Oh, I did. I did every color in the rainbow. I did fuchsia was a big one. I did this kind of like barf green one time. Orange. So I just did every color you could do. I did blonde. I did everything.
It was insane. You were just the best. You were our natural leader. You know, you could outdance, outparty, and outfight everybody. And it's wild, man. I still look back on those two seasons of the after school TV dance show Getting Down as the best days of my life. I'm sure you think that too, right?
The best days of my life?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
What?
I'm sorry.
I mean, we were like rock stars in the Quint Cities. Everyone recognized us from being in their TVs. Like, it was the equivalent of getting a blue check mark overnight. You know, your whole world instantly becomes better and all your problems instantly go away.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a time, Darren.
Yeah. Oh, man. Every nightclub let us in for free. We got to throw out first pitches and do coin tosses at all the big games. I don't think I paid for anything for those entire 2 years. And I'm not even going to mention all the free clothes Chess King was giving us to wear on the show. I still think I had my pink leg warmers. But I'll tell you, you were on a whole different level than us, especially when your Halloween Dance Murder single came out, The Dance Floor Killer, and it went to the top of all the local radio station playlists. You were ruling the roost.
Well, it was a hot streak. I'm not going to deny it.
You were unstoppable.
It felt good.
I bet. You were a sleeveless shirted parachute pants wearing golden god.
Yeah, don't forget my headband.
Insane. And it was always different every day.
Yeah, I remember one time I was, and I'm not trying to brag or anything, but Mike Reno from Loverboy came to check out me doing the song, and he saw that headband, and he was just like, "You wear it better than I do, bro."
I heard he was terrified that what's his name, Mike Dean, was he the guitar player, that he was going to replace Reno with you.
Paul Dean, yeah. I think it was Paul Dean.
Paul Dean.
Yeah.
Mike Dean, of course, is the bassist in Corrosion of Conformity. And there was also the drummer for Gangrene, I think, was named Mike Dean. But anyway, go ahead.
Of course. No. And then Mike Reno ate the headband he was wearing at the time because he just deferred to me. But Paul Dean hated me.
He did. Why?
Because he thought I was going to replace him in the band.
Oh, my God.
That's terrified. Bad.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about this. You had this entourage, in addition to us guys in the Dance Warriors, who would follow you everywhere in school. Now, who were those guys? It felt like they might have had mob connections, and they all looked like they were at least 35.
Yeah, well, you know, I did have an entourage, and things kind of come together. It's one of those things. You know a guy from this, you know a guy from that, you turn around, and then you, next thing you know, that's your crew.
Everyone wanted to be part of your crew, and at one point, you had your own jeweler who was following you around. What was his name? Dr. Danny Diamond? Now, he wasn't a real doctor, was he?
He was a doctor, but not an MD. I don't know what he was a doctor of, but I know he would always, because people would call him on that, and he'd be like, "No, I'm a doctor," and then.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
No.
That's wild. But you know, you were so popular that you actually needed a police escort to get from class to class. It was so crazy. I mean, sure, you rode in the sidecar of an off-duty motorcycle cop, which ultimately made you look less cool than if you'd walked, but you stayed safe, which I thought was of the utmost importance.
Mm-hmm. It was important, the safety first, except for the idea of the motorcycle in the school.
I thought it was weird that, like, he took the muffler off so that even more exhaust could be shot out. It was very weird.
That was actually my idea. I thought it really would, I thought in a weird a way it would be like hiding in plain sight, but it turned out it didn't work that way. Everybody knew that I was there. It just would, it was more because the thing was so loud and so filthy. And it, the motorcycle also had an idling problem. So it would just kind of like go that, you'd like shut the ignition off. It'd be still like,
we all thought that was like a jazz guy out in the hallway between classes.
No, it wasn't a jazz guy. It was my motorcycle.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, everything got really weird when you were signing autographs for our teachers. I mean, that's a very hard power dynamic to alter once it's laid out. And I can't say I was surprised when you ended up switching desks with our science teacher, Mr. Vogelthorpe, and then ultimately made him go to summer school.
Yeah. I held him back. I was actually threatening to just make him take the grade over again. But he did have to go to summer school, and I begrudgingly let him pass.
Which was great because you were, my memory is correct, you were terrible at science. Like, you didn't know anything, which I thought was amazing that you, that the tables got turned on this guy.
Yeah. No, I knew nothing about any of it. I was one of the worst students, and I got an A++++ when I graduated.
A+, wow.
Yeah. Which you can slide the pluses to other classes, which is one of the things about a triple plus is.
Oh, interesting. So if you only got like a B in another class, you could apply it to that?
Yes. Yeah. The three pluses can be slid onto any other grade.
Wow.
And two pluses will bump you up a whole letter.
Oh my God. Wow. See, that's why you were the leader, you know, and that's why everyone was trying to take you down because of course with the great power that you had, you know, came those great challenges to that power. But, you know, We disposed all comers on getting down. You know, the best dancers from all over the Quint cities, they suffered defeat at the hands of our feet.
Defeat by defeat.
Yes, good one. But, of course, then there was Brian Detweiler and the Eastbridge Prancing Exsanguinators, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those guys could dance.
Oh boy. You got, that's the understatement of the decade.
And I'm sure I wasn't alone in this, but that was the only dance crew that had me quaking in my capizios.
They were something else.
They were. I seriously thought we were going to lose that dance off in the Kern Coliseum parking lot after that Thompson Twins show.
Mm-hmm. No, I was worried about that. That was,
And you.
What's that? Say how it went. I want to hear you say it.
Hang on. I dropped my wallet. It's too thick.
You have like a George Costanza wallet, Darren?
Hang on. I have to use two hands to pick it up. There we go.
Well, that's some kind of wallet.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. But, you know, we were all resigned to losing that night until you pulled off that quad somersault with the triple backflip and stuck that landing with every hair of your power mullet still in place. I still can't believe you did that.
Mm-hmm. It was just, I did not even have that planned.
Right?
It just came from the moment.
Insane. And you really made Brian and those Eastbridge jerks look like rejects from the Jewel Hallemeyer dancers. But he always maintained that you used a secret mini tramp to get that kind of air.
Absolutely not.
To his dying day, he could never admit that you were the better dancer.
No mini tramps. No mini tramps. Never once.
You're like Queen and no synthesizers.
Absolutely. That's where I got it from. I was like, and if you notice when I would, at the programs that we would have at our performances, it would say there is no use of mini tramps in this performance.
Tom, I got to be honest.
What's that, Darren?
I used a mini tramp at least 3 times.
You did?
I did. Yeah, I didn't tell you because I knew you'd be mad.
Well, I am. That was a big sticking point for me. That was a point of pride. No mini tramps.
Didn't reflect on you. Just me. You know, I'm the one that has had to live with it all these years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's disappointing, Darren, that you used a mini tramp during our routines.
I know, but you know what was also disappointing?
What's that?
You know, by the summer of 1988, it was all over. You know, tastes and fashions changed, and we were victims of it.
Yeah, I remember they just didn't want what we were doing anymore.
They didn't. And, you know, kudos to you for trying to keep the gang together when you persuaded us to change our name to Tough Stuff, the Quint City's only all-male hair metal dance troupe.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was I saw an opportunity with bands like Warrant and, Poison, Warrant, Keel.
You were into White Lion pretty much.
I loved White Lion. Oh my God. I still do. I still love White Lion so much.
Good stuff. Yeah. Vito Bratta, great guitar player.
I just feel like they were our Beatles in a way.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I think we all knew that this whole concept was doomed the moment we started dancing to nothing but a good time outside of that Guns N' Roses concert and people started throwing rocks and those wet hoagies at us. I mean, it was almost like they knew it was going to happen, so they got extra oil on their subs.
Yes, they were. Those were the wettest sandwiches. That was kind of, and that was an early version of Jersey Mike's, I believe, which everybody knows are the wettest sandwiches on the planet.
That was their original slogan, wasn't it? The wettest hoagies on the planet.
Yeah, and they used to just sell them. You used to get them in like a small aquarium. They would,
right?
They would actually sell, and that turned out to be too costly when they franchised out. But the original Jersey Mike's, I think, still does the aquarium.
They might, and my memory is the original name of Jersey Mike's subs was Jersey Mike's Aquarium, but people, you know, obviously thought it was a fish food or fish place.
Yeah, and then you'd order a tuna would be the only version that made sense for that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Wait, what's going on? What in the name of Mother Sweet Cider is?
What's going on, Darren?
Oh no.
What?
Oh no! Oh my God, it's a whole team of APFBG agents out there. Oh my God.
What is that?
Oh no. Oh no. What's what? The ATFBG?
Yeah, yeah. What does that stand for?
Oh, well, it's this little known but immensely powerful division of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, but they deal with contraband baked goods. Oh my God, they must know all about the tasty cakes. Oh no.
Yeah. Is it bad?
Oh no, it's like either they were listening to us talk on this show or someone dropped a dime on me. You don't think it was that guy, I'm using air quotes, Roy, do you?
You can stop using air quotes for it. His name is literally Roy.
Yep. It sure is, and I see him in the passenger seat of one of those cars out there, eating peanut shoes and laughing. Mm-hmm. Looks like he got me good.
Well, I mean, you played with fire, buddy. I don't know what to tell you. It's a dangerous game.
Tom, it looks like I'm going to the hut, but you'll bail me out, right?
No.
Please, please.
I, Darren, I can't.
Please, we go back so far.
We do, but you also are, you admitted to a crime and you're also a flight risk. I don't think you'd, I think I'd end up losing that money.
No way. I only have 4 other passports. I used to have 7.
So you only have, you lost 3 of your other passports.
No, I sold them.
Oh, you sold them. Okay.
You're making me sound really evil. Some friend you are. Thanks for nothing.
Well, Darren, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, they're coming to the door. And thanks for nothing. And by the way, I was trying to kill you with my son's helicopter.
Oh, that's charming. Now the truth comes out. Right? You tried to kill me. It was your son's little mini copter. Darren? Oh, he's gone. Well, you guys, he's arrested. Well, that's something, huh? It's funny. Hold on 1 second. Good old Darren. Haven't heard from him in a while. Heard from him now. So, as I was talking, as I mentioned before, you go to Patreon. We're sending out stickers, the Best Show stickers, the USA sticker that we made, patriotic sticker, designed by Jeff T. Owens, my guy, best in the biz. He's a good guy, good guy. He made a cool new sticker. Everybody pledging $5 or more per month to the Patreon gets the sticker. So go over there and make sure you leave your address. There's instructions on that. And I'm looking at here on Twitter, man. I mean, all I wrote was, here's a tweet. Who is the best American band ever? I says it's the Velvet Underground. 4 perfect albums, all completely different. Who do you says it is? And then there's people, God, you nerds like boring music. Oh, I can't wait to see how interesting this. Let me see how interesting this clown is. Oh, it's one of those people. It's one of those people where it's just, you look at the thing. First of all, guy's been on Twitter for 10 years. Still hovering there in the mid 100s on his 170 something followers. You wanna step it up? You're gonna put all of us on trial? You step up your Twitter. You had a decade. You do a half decent job on Twitter, you end up with 300 and change with followers. Look. Everybody on the thing, do they like some stuff that's a little expected? Yeah, a little bit. I don't care. Somebody thinks Wilco's the best band ever. Good for them. That's great. Not for me, but not maybe for you. And then there's the other people got on me where they're like, you know, music shouldn't be a competition and stuff. I didn't say it's a competition. Oh, and then here's the one just came in now, one that I saw so many times. Blank, and it's not close. How many did I see where people were like, who's the best band? And they're like, it's Ween. Ween, and it's not close. Whatever. God bless all of you. God bless all of you. Pat?
Sir.
What we got going on? We got anything going on on the hotline?
Sure do. Putting you through.
Thank you. Thank you. Put my guests through. Now this is, I'm going to say this. We get a lot of people on the show and it's usually a guy who got a Baby Yoda tattoo or we'll get somebody who was a background talent on an episode of How I Met Your Mother. It's usually we're pulling from the dregs for the most part on the show, but tonight it's very rare that we get somebody who's a honest to goodness legend on the show. And tonight, I'm telling you, we got a legend on the show. If everything is correct, we have Meryl Marco on the, are you there?
I'm here, and I just got a Baby Yoda tattoo.
Oh, you did? So you're doing double duty then. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, that then I don't even know what you just went through through two levels of the roof. You're just shattering all the rules tonight.
I know, it's kind of sad because it's not the best weather out here, so I'm not really able to sport it and get the full effect at the market and so forth that I would be getting. Although you couldn't tell anyway because everyone's got masks on, so maybe it's just as well. We'll have to wait for the vaccine.
You got to wait for the vaccine. Maybe ask if they can inject it into Mila Baby Yoda's forehead.
Yeah. Well, that would be lovely.
Are we going to look for, there's going to be a whole series of, and look, a vaccine, it's great. Everybody should go get it. You know what I'm not looking forward to is the, whenever there's going to be a thing where it's going to be like a famous person saying like, I got the shot. And then they're all going to like do the same photo thing of them like, I got the shot. And it's going to be like, oh, it's Michael Chiklis getting the shot. And it's like, add Michael.
Black and white, you mean, and it's going to be all framed one after another.
Yes.
Like a commercial for something sophisticated.
Yes. I'm just waiting for whatever the hashtag is or the device is going to be like hashtag got the shot. And then it's going to be like, you'll look and it'll be like, it'll be just like, Jim Belushi saying like, holding like his, pulling his sleeve up in a photo and it's like, hashtag got the shot.
Well, you certainly called it first. I haven't heard anyone discussing that yet, but I think you're totally right. Are we still doing sequels?
We do things. We do so many things at the same time here, but right. You can do that. We can talk about any. I want to talk to you about anything you want to talk about, but I just want to say thank you for acknowledging that I found a way to complain about the vaccine. I think that it just takes a special skill set and I have a real special talent to find. Yeah. Thank you. And I was the first one to start moaning about something that hasn't happened yet.
I applaud that. I totally applaud that. I didn't think any sequels. I thought of a prequel. The only prequel I could think of was Hawaii 2.0, and it would just be mostly like whenever there'd be an action shot, there'd be buffering.
Okay. So Hawaii 2.0, yeah. And it's a prequel to which one, though? Because there's the new Hawaii 5.0.
Oh.
There's one with like Scott, with like Scott Kahn.
Hawaii 5.0 would be the Hawaii 2.0 because the new Hawaii 5.0 would be 5.1, wouldn't it?
I guess it would have to be Hawaii 5.1.
Yeah.
Would be the thing. And it, it's one of those ones with, I think Scott Kahn is the son of James Kahn is the,
I have not seen it, I have to admit, but I understand that they're all getting the vaccine and are going to be making one of those commercials.
Great.
One of their opening episodes when we finally get back from the quarantine.
Sure. So it'll be Scott Kahn with his sleeve pulled up, got the shot. And, also, I was surprised you're not working up a Hawaii 5.0 packet. You're not getting your packet together to staff up?
Yeah, no, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I would like very much to work on that. That would be, I can't really think of a better use of my talent. I guess I should watch a few of them first.
Sure. Now that seems like a great way for you to use your particular skill set would be
It does.
Be sitting in a writer's room pitching out. It's just like, what if there's some counterfeit money? That's
is that what they do on that show? I thought they were surfing.
But if the cops have to do something, maybe it's just like, what if the surfboards are made of gold and that's how they're importing the drugs, or they're made of cocaine, like the surfboards.
They're bringing the cocaine in the hollow part of the surfboard.
Yeah. That actually, if they haven't done that, I would like.
Now that I think of it, that's actually an idea that I'm sure we could sell, and I'll be writing it up.
Sure. Well, what you did also.
You better probably.
Well, you look,
say I made that up.
You take that one. That one's a gift. That one. But I'm going to say this and watch this segue. Watch this segue. Another thing you did write up, Meryl Marco. Want to see how he did that? Is a new book called We Saw Scenery. And it's ironic because it's a new thing you wrote up and it's an old thing you wrote up because it's you taking your childhood diaries and.
Yeah. Well, I thought what would be funny, I was cleaning out my office. I don't know if you do this, but I compulsively say everything I think is funny because I think I'm going to use it at some point. If it can actually make me laugh, I respect it entirely too much and I save it. And if it's still making me laugh after I find it again, then I continue to save it. Some of this stuff I've had 25, 30 years. Mm-hmm. Scrap of paper that makes me laugh. Anyway, so I regularly have to weed through all this stuff, and I was cleaning out my office, and I came upon these little diaries that my mother gave me, which made me laugh just because they have a lock and a key, as if anything I was saying when I was 10, 11, 12 years old was so important that, you know, you better not see the light of day. So I thought,
sure, sure.
An amusing thing to do would be to sit down and read them and just review them like they're an early work of literature since I went on to become a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned a lot of stuff. Like, first of all, I only remembered about a third or half of what I wrote. And then also, I don't know, do you keep diaries or journals or anything?
I try and then I fail and I'll just be like, now I'm doing it. And then, then it's like, I don't feel like it today. And it's just like, well, there goes that for another year. See you next year.
That's actually what I've been doing since the quarantine. I used to keep them, but when I first got them, when my mother first gave them to me, I couldn't figure out what you were supposed to do with them because, you know, somebody gives you a blank book with all these dates on it and tells you you're supposed to write something. So I wrote down everything I did. And that's why I decided to turn these things into a book, because they were almost an archaeological artifact of what it was like to be a kid in the 60s. It's just day after day, everything. And it started to make me laugh because it's totally not the kind of way. If I keep a diary now, it's mostly whining or, you know, some kind of stress release or something. God damn it! And that sort of stuff. But these were, it was all the stuff that happened to me when I was a kid. So I thought, well, that's kind of interesting to, you know, it's a little bit like if you found the writings of an Aztec child from the 13th century who told you what it was like every day to be a member of the Aztecs, you know, was a little more contemporary than that.
Yeah, it's a really amazing book. It's fascinating. It's really funny and sweet. And there's so much. There's something to the innocence in it of a kid who doesn't know how things are gonna work yet.
No, and then there was also, there was that, and there was a couple of things I learned. Another thing was, I don't, you know, speaking only for myself, but perhaps this relates to you, I wouldn't have known what the arc was of my early life at all if I hadn't been looking at this. I didn't know what that story was or if it led to anything. It didn't seem to me that those details added up to anything, but it turns out, you know, I went into writing for TV. Are you still there?
I am, yes.
Oh, so I just heard a bunch of clicking, and I thought maybe one of those things like customer service where they go, you hear clicking, and then a minute later you hear,
No, there's no, yep. we're not hanging up on you. I thought you were hanging up on me.
No, I was not hanging up on you. And now I've forgotten what I was saying.
You were saying?
It became apparent to me after I reviewed all this stuff and was trying to figure out how to turn it into a book that I was way engaged with pop culture and media. You know, I was entering every contest that was on the radio. I was phoning radio stations and I was entering contests on television and I was getting my letter read on the air of some kid's show about how to have the monkey that was on the show come to your birthday party. I only got runner up, but I was excited about that. And I was doing a lot of stuff with media. It's sort of like, I wasn't just watching it and consuming it. I was working in it. kind
yeah.
of.
You were the table was being set for your career.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is it was because you know the guy I live with, I said that to him, were you always phoning radio stations and entering TV contests and stuff? And he said, no, I never did that. He was just playing music, and he's a musician. So
I did that all the time. I entered contests as kids. I would call WNBC, which was the station in New York that was the,
as they'd say, WNBC.
Yeah. When Imus was on it, and he would, but it would be like music and, there was WABC and WNBC, and WNBC became WFAN, the sports station, and WABC became like a right wing, garbage, distribution center.
Right.
But I would call both of them, and I do remember winning a Frisbee that I won a Frisbee. And then
I won I entered some contest, there was a local peanut butter brand that had a name, the peanut contest. They were the second company to have a peanut. I believe Planters was ahead of them. They didn't have a name for their peanut. So I entered like 30 times and I won like 3 t-shirts and a copy of their commercial, which I used to play constantly. I considered it quite a prize. I was, you know, excited about getting merch.
Oh no. The idea of like that to me, that Frisbee. And look, I don't like Frisbees. I don't play with Frisbees. It's not like I ever was like, hey, let's go throw that WABC Frisbee around. But I got that Frisbee. I was never more excited that somebody mailed me a Frisbee. And it had a little logo on it. And I was just like, this is maybe the greatest day of my life.
Sadly, you couldn't wear it to school like you could if they sent you a shirt. But then nobody was wearing shirts at that point with logos on them when I was a kid. So you couldn't really, I would have looked like a fool if I wore my, session school day peanut butter peanut to school. That wouldn't have been prestigious.
Yeah. Well, the thing with saving everything, I get that. And I want to say we have Meryl Marco on the show right now, and she has a new book out, and that book is called, We Saw Scenery, the early diaries of Meryl Marco.
By the way, the name of it is because I say that on a couple pages in these diaries. When I was traveling I would go on like a little trip with my parents to somewhere, like we were living in Florida at the time, so we would go to the Everglades, and the way I would record the event was, we went to the Everglades, we saw scenery, which I thought was the most minimal definition it was sort of the opposite of Anne Frank. It was just minimally descriptive. And I thought that was pretty funny. I don't think I've ever used the word scenery since.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it just feels like you're meeting the obligation of the moment and doing the bare minimum to have met the obligation and to be like, no, I covered that one.
Older, I started to try to, belly up to the bar in a more important way in the diaries. And I got my big moment when I was a kid during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I thought that was my big diary moment. So I tried to make a list of all the things I would miss if I died in the Cuban Missile Crisis and so forth. I tried to really work up a page knowing that probably my diary might be the only thing that would be left after we were bombed by Russia in the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Sure. No, it was important that there needed to be a document that people could refer back to generations later. to piece the whole thing back. Like, we need to reassemble society. We've got this notebook that a child wrote.
That's what I was sort of hoping for. I was hoping for some sort of grand diary moment with that. And then from that point on, I tried to, as I got older, that was another thing that made me laugh about the diaries. As I got older, I was becoming more articulate, and I was writing for an audience, but of course I had no audience. I was just alone in my room. So I was sort of broadcasting. I felt that I should add things of import to the diary, which was mostly about boys I liked and so forth, I would put at the bottom, I'd write a paragraph about this guy, Robert, who I was very in love with. And then at the bottom, I would talk about, how they were having trouble integrating the schools in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, or the moon, when they started the satellite program, I started to try to integrate, space travel into the diary.
You were running a very progressive platform in your, diary.
It's a touching document. And then another thing I thought was sort of interesting about it is the amount that I was obsessed with having a boyfriend. I didn't have a boyfriend till I was way older, like maybe senior year in high school or something. But I was totally obsessed with it when I was about 10, 11, 12, 13. Felt that because I didn't have a boyfriend, my life was basically over. And there was nothing that I would be able to do. I would live a life alone forever, a reject. And
you play out the string. You just were just fate. Your fate was determined. And
right. There was nothing to do, really, except for just sit back and accept it. And it was so dire that I thought, well, that would be a good reason to make this into a book, because kids must still be doing this, in which case, at least one kid this age who's suffering this way looks at this, they will say to themselves, well, you know, she didn't do that bad. I mean, she wrote a book. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would show that there is some pattern to life after you don't have a boyfriend when you're 11.
Sure. You just got to hang in there. It's all around the corner.
Yeah, and then it really gets good, you know. Their love gets so easy after that. As you get older, you know, there's no complications, and it really just a smooth sailing after.
No, it's all downhill after that. Now, people know you. You've written so many books, and you also have done so much legendary TV writing and so much.
I'm such a legend that people think I'm dead.
Well, maybe now they'll be like, oh, she's alive. How about that?
Yeah.
And, but I've been doing this during the quarantine, Meryl. One of the things I've been doing is going on YouTube and I watch these, there's this one maniac on there who puts together, I mean, I say it in the nicest possible way. This guy who I guess has every episode of Late Night and does a five hour.
Or Giller, I'm not sure how you say his name, but yes, Don Z.
That's exactly that guy.
Well, if I ever need him, if I ever have to, for some reason or other, have a piece of videotape from that place, he amazes me. He says, I say things to him like, you know, at some place in the early 80s, there was something about cabbage that we did, and I can't remember what it was, but it was, I think we had a head of cabbage on the show, and 30 seconds later, he sends me the video.
That is unbelievable.
He's finished speaking. He knows where it is. He has it cataloged, and he just he sends it to me. He's a great asset if you need a piece of obscure information from the origins of the Letterman show.
Oh yeah. Cause you wrote on the show for how many years?
I was in and out for maybe the first six or seven years.
Mm-hmm.
And you worked with Mr. Breckman, did you not?
I did. Andy Breckman was, I worked on Monk with Andy for all 8 years of Monk.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time.
You know, he was actually just like Monk when he worked on the Letterman show. He was absent-minded and very obsessed with OCD and
really
and solving mysteries.
Oh, that's actually and solving mysteries. Sure.
Yeah.
The other friend. Well, I think we have a bunch of friends in common, including our friend Megan Keister, who put us in touch for this. So thank you to Megan. She's very funny. And, one of my favorite comedians and people.
Yeah, she's very funny.
But,
a book out that we put out 2 years ago called The Indignities of Being a Woman, where we researched how women have been getting shit on since the first day that they made civilization complex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's a funny book about that. But it's an audio book.
Well, you're both funny, so it would be funny.
It would be
funny. Saying it like that should be a shocker that two incredibly funny people made a funny thing when they work together.
It shouldn't be a shocker, and yet it is.
We also, Adam Resnick is a good friend of mine as well.
Adam Resnick, I never knew him too well. He was, he was kind of an intern, I think, when I knew him.
Okay.
He was an intern and hadn't advanced to any actual status, and then he went on to become king of the world.
Yes, and he is currently king of the world, and he's a benevolent leader, and we appreciate his kindness.
The smooth transition for Trump now, isn't he?
Sure, yes. He's helping with the transitions. So you were there for like 7 or so years on and off, you said. One of the things I've been watching, these like super cuts of where it's like every Albert Brooks appearance on.
Yeah, you mean Don Jr. put it together? There's one of me and I can't bring myself to look at it.
Well, one thing I've been watching, I watched probably about 47 hours of Jay Leno on the show, and it was weird and fascinating to see. He came out like he would come out in like Elvis or something for so much of the thing.
Really good Elvis. You know, here's the thing. I met Letterman and I met Jay Leno, and I met a lot of these people at the Comedy Store where I was doing stand up before the Letterman show happened. Mm-hmm. And at the Comedy Store, I was like an incoming freshman, and they were like the big men on campus, Dave, mm-hmm. and Jay, and a couple others, and Jay was definitely the best guy at the Comedy Store. He was the funniest. He was the biggest smartass. He had just an attitude. He was sarcastic. He used to do Elvis, and he did a great Elvis because he looked sort of faintly like Elvis,
mm-hmm.
And for me, that made it just a huge impression on me. He's really actually very funny. He ended up trying very hard to go middle of the road when he got the Tonight Show, but he didn't used to do that at the Comedy Store when I saw him.
No, he is consistently funny on this, and it's funny to see how hard he works to be funny, and I mean that in a good way. It's not like he's sweaty and he's so in control of it, but it's just like he would just go all out, and it's just like it seems like it would be easy to forget that that's who that guy was, a guy who would literally episode after episode would bring out an issue of TV Guide and then go through it with like elaborate jokes written for like it just seemed like he was working for hours on what he was going to do on the show.
Language. He did language really well. I remember jokes where he really phrased things that were almost novelistic kind of descriptions and so forth that were like memorable. I mean, yeah, he used to really have a great act.
Yeah. But this is the thing I wanted to ask is he would sometimes film things for the show. Like these, like he'd bring like, it's a film of me driving a dump truck over the top of a compact car. Cause he was always, you know, he's one of those car guys who's
that stuff at all. That stuff I'm blank on.
Like who was paying for that? That's what I want to know. I was like, was he going out of pocket for that?
That I cannot tell you. The way we had the show organized when I was there was two very distinct departments. There was the writing department and there was the talent department, and never the twain shall meet because we were doing so much writing when we started that show that it was a continuum of just writing and writing and writing because every single day the show is on again and you have to write more stuff for it. So we didn't really find out that much stuff about what was going on in the talent department. They were organizing that stuff. So I don't remember any of that. Maybe I don't even know if that was taking place when I was there. Or I was just, I didn't used to watch a lot of the shows. I was always up in my office working on the next show while the one show was on, you know, it was.
Yeah. That's how it actually is that people maybe don't know that. It's like, if you're making a show, you don't have the latitude to be nostalgic about it or to just to sit back and just admire the thing. It's like you're just on to the next one because that's how it's got to be.
Unless you are driving home with the host and he is complaining about every element of it, and then you're and it's slightly different.
Well, sure. No, well, then you're basically.
People are not driving home with the host, and so they don't have that issue.
Yeah, so you're getting it from all angles, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you do. When you're working for a boss who dwells on his own shortcomings.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started, you were in. You came to L.A. How old were you when you came to Los Angeles?
48.
You were 48. Okay.
Wow, I'm getting really weird.
I hear that. What is that? Jason, do you know what that is? Let's see.
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's just the phone.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Jason's saying you have a lousy phone, Carol.
I'm not saying that.
There has been instances where rats have eaten my phone lines, and then okay. It's difficult to talk on the phone.
Sure. Well, let's hope the rats at least ease up on the phone for the remainder. So you came to L.A.
I was 25 or 26.
Okay. What were some of those first? What were some of those first shows you were working on?
Well, the first thing I got work really quickly, which was really just nightmarishly shocking to me. I mean, I was stunned. I sort of was taking a gamble, a risk to see whether or not I could get a job. And I got hired immediately to do research for this woman who was the head writer for Mary Hartman, which was my favorite show at the time. So I was doing that, and I was, like 2 weeks after I moved here, was attending meetings with Norman Lear and stuff like that, and then I got a job as a staff writer, and they were redoing Laugh-In. It wasn't the original Laugh-In. It was called the new Laugh-In. And it was truly terrible and unfunny, and I never liked the old Laugh-In.
No, Laugh-In sucks, and that's one of the things
not my sense of humor at all. It just...
Well, it was like vaudeville. There was like... It's like if you watch that, if people like rewrite history on some of these things where they're just like, Laugh-In had its edge to it. And it's for like 30 seconds of an episode, the rest of it was like Artie Johnson on a park bench doing
like that stuff. I mean, it would appear that someone for me, I just always found it laugh-free. And then I was suddenly writing on it, and I didn't exactly know how you wrote jokes. I knew I could write funny, but I didn't know how you wrote a joke, per se. So I had it was all new writers, and Robin Williams was in the cast, by the way. That was the most distinguishing feature. It was his first job as well. I had to learn how to write a Laugh-In sketch. This guy sat and taught me, the head writer of the thing. And, it was like, you had to have a small idea and then break it into like 8 sections so they could keep coming back to it, another version of it. So for instance, like, you show someone playing pool. And then you pull the pool cue back and it hits the ball and the ball explodes. That would be one thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then another one, he pulls the cue back and he hits the ball and he gets hit in the face with a pie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that would be the second one. And then the third one, he pulls the cue back and he hits the ball and water comes down and hits him in the head.
Yeah, so you were basically writing Bazooka Joe comics.
Exactly right. It didn't make any sense at all, but you know, there'd be a laugh if he got hit with a pie.
And yeah.
I've never understood why hitting anyone with a pie is supposed to be funny.
Yeah, I see that, and I'm just like, well, I would have eaten that pie.
Yeah, why would that be a thing that you would have, that you'd be hitting people with? I guess, I'm not sure. I don't know if there was a moment in time where people were just amazingly obsessed and interested in the idea that you could hit someone with a pie. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, is that just like a thing that would read from the stage? That it would just be like, when everything was in theaters, or you're doing, it's like a, if you hit it with a pie, you can see it.
Yeah, I probably was vaudeville, but I don't even know where it started. In fact, when we're finished with this conversation, I'm going to Google origin of hitting with pie.
Sure. That could be your next book.
Yeah, and then probably 2 minutes into reading of the first one, I'll forget I did that, and I'll be researching something.
Now, what was the first time you remember hearing one of your jokes get on television?
Well, let's see. I don't think anything on the New Laugh-In ever got on. That was such a terrible show. I don't think anybody got anything on that show. As a matter of fact, who was hired as a writer, I think the head writer was just recycling old Laugh-In. Mm-hmm. It actually even had some Sakatumi on it, which was always mysterious and continues to be mysterious. Mysterious enough that I might want to bring it back.
Sure, you bring it for the newer Laugh-In.
Maybe it's time to revive Sakatumi. I don't know what it ever meant, but it might mean something even more interesting now. And that's the first time I ever. I don't know if I have that emblazoned in my memory. It might be. I wrote a bunch of pilots with Letterman before we ever got his talk shows on.
Okay.
There were other talk shows. There was one that didn't get on that was called Leave It to Dave that was truly dastardly and was influenced by one of his managers who thought it was that the guests should come down chutes or crawl down ladders to enter instead of just walk onto the set, so they would be tumbling down into pillows.
That just sounds like it would really change the whole talk show game
boring desk stuff. There is no reason for there to be a desk, but there was no reason to have those pillows in that chute either.
But the whole thing is when you see the desk and you're just like, man, there's no reason for a desk. And then you watch like a show without the desk and you're just like, I think I wish that guy was behind a desk. Like,
it really is a weird, it's a weird thing. Having worked on that show, we had many discussions about that desk to desk or not to desk. And it just became, it would be like, why resist? We'll just have to have a desk. And I'm not sure. That's another thing like pie. Why was there ever a desk? Who knows?
Yeah. I like the idea. Yeah, but I like the idea, though.
Interview maybe is what it's supposed to be. Like, he's the boss, and then the guests come on, and they're doing a job interview.
Yeah, I guess it feels that way. Just like, and it's just kind of like, you got the job. The job was to promote your thing. Thank you for you're hired. I'm just picturing if, like, the sliding down the thing is all I can think of now, picturing, like, Art Donovan or one of these like old people having to go down a slide and then be like, oh, I'm hurt. Can you, like, how long would it have been before like George Gobel got hurt?
Well, that would have been a memorable show. That would be replaying that on the anniversary show year after year after year.
Yeah. Or just somebody stuck in the chute.
That would have been great. Yeah. Sorry you didn't go ahead with that. I do remember that Letterman hated that idea immediately and then made me go to his manager and tell him we weren't doing it. It was something I want to black out of my memory, and I'm going to go ahead and do that right now. I'm blacking it out. And then there was that show, and I maybe had a joke on that show.
Okay.
And then, in fact, I know I did. And then we went on to do another one. And then we did a morning show. So, and I had a lot of material on that one. I was pretty much writing that one single-handedly with Rich Hall. So that would someplace in there, you know, once it started, there were so many that I don't think I was ever one.
Mm-hmm. That it's just now you're just shoveling jokes into the train engine, like to keep the train going.
Yeah, in fact, but I'm laughing. I got so few jokes on what everyone did that I started doing stand up just because I was writing them all, and I thought, well, I've gotten like a billion jokes here. Why don't I get up and see if any of them work?
Start doing something with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was told by somebody who shall remain nameless to ask you about your Timothy Leary story.
Timothy Leary? No, you mean it, Ken Kesey?
Well, I guess it would be Ken Kesey. Yeah, they got it wrong. It was Megan. It was your friend. It was Megan.
That I went to two Ken Kesey acid tests.
Yes. So you, Ken Kesey, author of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I don't actually have a story about him. I just, when I went to high school in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I went to college there too, and I was there right at the right moment where every weird thing in the counterculture stuff exploded in the 60s, and I went to everything. Everything. I mean, I really was zealous. I saw Lenny Bruce perform. I went to two Ken Kesey acid tests. I went to two Beatle concerts. I went to Altamont. I went to everything.
So you were at Altamont.
Yeah.
And how far back were you?
That's the other thing is I went to everything and I left everything early because I never really was having a good time at these things. I knew that I needed to be at them because they were important to go to.
Sure.
So I went to them and then just left early. I didn't like the smell of patchouli.
No, well, that would do it for you then. That would be the wrong place to be if you're not into the smell of patchouli. So you saw the Beatles at Candlestick Park?
I certainly did. Twice.
Well, that's exciting.
I saw them at Candlestick Park, and I saw them at the Cow Palace was the first one. And that was another thing that I put in my that's in the book that made me laugh is, you know, you've often heard of people who said they went to Beatle concerts, and it's just legend at this point. It's one amazing memory, a golden, precious memory of life, kind of. And I gave them bad reviews because I hated all the screaming girls. And I still don't. There's another thing I don't understand. Why were those girls screaming? What does that have to do with being in love with someone? Screaming.
You don't scream at people you love.
Well, you do. You always scream at the ones you love.
Yeah. You don't just see them. They walk in a room, and then you just go into like a panicked screaming fit to where you fall on the ground.
If you really want to be true to love, it should have been just screaming at them in rage. What are you doing? Get off that stage.
Yeah. And it's also so funny. It's like when you see the footage of the Beatles playing these baseball stadiums and that it was a stage just out by like second base and this just smallish, like now you see, now people's concerts take over the entire stadium would be, you would know where you would feel the magnitude of the band. But then it was just like, where should we put this stage? I don't know, like second base.
Yeah, no, it was that. But the screaming, you couldn't hear anything. And the first one I went to when I was about 13 or 14 and I was really, deeply in love with the Beatles at that point. So I went and the girls, the screaming girls, which were all of them, rushed the stage. So they were all around the stage, so the front row was open. So we went to the front row, and we were standing on the seats in the front row, couldn't see and couldn't hear anything. That was my experience seeing the Beatles. How great of an experience is that?
You know, those are the details you're supposed to.
I'm here to tell you about the Ken Kesey acid test, right?
Yeah.
I don't really know what. Here's my favorite thing about the Ken Kesey acid test. On my way out, well, staying there was a weird, you know, I didn't take acid or anything. I just, it was just a big happening and I was just there waiting to find a way to get my friends to leave with me. And somebody stuck their hand up my dress and it was so much smoke I couldn't close my eyes and I really wasn't having that great a time even though the Grateful Dead were playing and everybody was playing and so forth. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we left. When I finally got someone to leave with me on my way out, I took a poster off the wall of the outside of the building, which was at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, and because I had that much space left in my bedroom and I needed a poster. So I took it with me and I, like I did with everything that I was telling you, I saved it. And about a year ago or maybe 6 months, yeah, about a year ago, CNN came to my house and they did I was part of a documentary called The History of Comedy. And so I had to decorate my office in order to be a talking head in this thing. So behind me, among the different things I've put up on the wall, I found this acid test poster, so I hung it up behind me thinking, well, this will be kind of interesting looking.
Mm-hmm.
And almost immediately I started hearing from a certain kind of person who was saying, is that an acid test poster behind you? No one ever mentioned anything I said in the interview. It was just like, is that a blue acid test poster behind you? And the end of the story is that I sold it for $20,000.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that a great story?
That is maybe the best story.
Yeah, I took it off the wall of a building and and my mother, of course, wanted me to throw it away because she thought it was disgusting. And then I sold it for $20,000.
$20,000. And now you've been actually going through your archives and the things you've been saving over the years and putting things on eBay.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of auctions. I'm funding all my favorite animal charities because when I like to give money to charities, but I never can write very big checks because I'm not in that wealth category.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly I realized I had all this stuff from my years at the Letterman show, like 9 jackets, which are big jackets, by the way. They're all men's large. They have those big leather sleeves and they're huge. And then I had all this other stuff that, like a couple of baseball shirts and football shirts and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of people who like that sort of stuff. So I've been auctioning it off for fairly big ticket money and giving the money to charity 100%.
That is awesome. What's coming up? Is there, you have another one coming up?
I have three up right now. The weirdest one, the ones that I think I can never tell which ones are going to appeal to people. I guess people like the jackets a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Last week I sold 3 pieces. I used to do all the remotes for the show the years I was there. I mean, where we took the camera out, I wrote and produced all of those.
Okay.
So, I had a bunch of stuff I saved on a remote. I would find the premises for my remotes by reading the phone book because that's what we had before the internet was the Manhattan phone book. So I'd go through it A to Z and look for anything that caught my eye that seemed like there was a question I could ask or something I'd never seen on TV. And I had a wide berth of ideas about what you might want to see on TV that you'd never see on TV. Like I remember trying to do a piece about aluminum anodizing just because I'd never seen that on TV.
Uh-huh.
And so I did a piece. I had accumulated a bunch of different ads that said, while you wait, while you wait, while you wait, while you wait. And then we went to all of them and we had something made at each of them while we waited. And then we made a piece out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I had those pieces in the closet. We made a joke out of it, and the pieces were crazy. They were about Connie Henderson, stewardess of the year, etc. But I had these things sitting in the closet here, and I sold them last week for $1,000.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I gave the money to an elephant rescue in Nairobi, which really, really made me happy.
That is so awesome. So people should check those out if they're in the market for Late Night with David Letterman collectibles that you're doing, and it goes to a good cause.
If you look at any of my social media, I keep pushing it on the social media. I keep saying, hey, did you forget about this? But right now there's a thing nobody has bid on that would be a thing I thought somebody would bid on. On the morning show, the Letterman morning show, we used to have a fake product called Winkie's Cow Paste. And I had quite a bit of Winkie's Cow Paste here, so I was trying to move it as an auction item.
Well, that's sitting out there. That's a buyer's market right now for that one. So wait, you really?
It's the only auction offering Winkie's Cow Paste.
Sure.
Anywhere.
And you really, you said you don't have the big money. You burned through all of that new Laugh-In money?
That was what it was. That was when I joined the Writers Guild. I advanced to Writers Guild scale at the Laugh-In.
Mm-hmm.
Thing. Which for me, I had been an art teacher right before that. So that for me was riches beyond my wildest dreams relative to being an art teacher, getting Writers Guild scale.
Yeah, it really is. It's exciting to get through that door, and you got through it, and you've stayed through it. And you're a legend. Own your legendary status, Meryl Marco.
What was your first job in this?
It would be Monk would be the first
Monk. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I could not believe it. And I still can't believe it sometimes.
Yeah. Just to be near Andy Breckman is a dream for most people.
Mm-hmm. Now,
ever met.
Say that again?
He is one of the funniest people I've ever met.
Oh my God. No, there's nobody when he does the thing he can do, it's just truly, you cannot, he could overtake any room no matter who it is, he could become the funniest person in the room.
And it's very distinct too. It's really, there's just a particular, I can't recreate it for you right now, but it's totally Breckmania.
Oh yeah.
Unlike, it's just his own weird take on everything and it's consistent.
Oh, it's unbelievable. He really, I'm so glad we both have him in common. I gotta wrap up. I do want to say, one thing that you're known for is your love of dogs. Right.
I am known for my love of dogs. Yeah.
Now, what goes into a good dog name? Because sometimes I hear people with dumb dog names.
I have a philosophy, as I do of most things, willing to bore people with. I differ from my beloved with whom I have lived for 20 years. He likes to go for, sort of adorable weird names. And I have always picked, and if left to my own devices, I would return only to this path, human names that nobody would ever imagine would be on a dog.
Okay.
It doesn't sound cute, or it doesn't sound at all like a pet name. Like I thought the other day, Richard.
Richard. Oh, so you'd be in a park and you'd be like, Richard.
Yeah.
Richard. Because you have to picture that when you think about a dog name, you have to picture the yelling of it.
Uh-huh.
Where, because if somebody goes and they name their dog like, if you named your dog like Toilet, then you have to go, God forbid your dog gets loose, and you're going through the neighborhood screaming, Toilet! Toilet!
Yeah, I had a friend who named their dog Taxi.
Mm-hmm. So, that's great. Yeah. Taxi. Yeah.
But I would still over and over again, I dwell on making a list of human names that don't feel like they belong anywhere near a dog. Like
Clark. Clark would not work for a dog, right?
Clark would be a good dog name, I would think.
Okay.
Nice in one syllable. You know, like Richard is annoyingly two syllables, so it becomes really, really unlike a dog.
Gene would not be a good one.
Gene. Yeah, Gene is a good dog name.
You think so?
I think there are people who name their dogs Tom, right? Nobody would name their dog Merrill. So that's
That sounds like a challenge. Sounds like you just put a challenge out on.
I'll name all my dogs Merrill from now on.
Yeah. Well, Merrill Marco, I want to say your book is great. It's called We Saw Scenery, and it's your early diaries from your childhood, and you did the illustrations for them too. Yeah, is that you?
Yes,
you did the illustrations. That's what can't you do? It's
an art.
Let's just list what you can't do. It would be a shorter list, apparently.
I literally can do everything. It's really surprising.
It's very impressive, and the book, in all seriousness, is such a fun, funny book, and it's sweet. And I think people are going to really like it. If they should check it out. And
a good Christmas present.
There you go. Yes. A good Christmas present. We Saw Scenery, the early diaries of Meryl Marco. And you.
Thank you.
You are somebody who I was a little lad with a TV in my own bedroom when I shouldn't have had one, and I just watched television round the clock, and I watched that very first episode of Late Night. When it happened, and it was because I watched the summer show. I did watch the summer show.
You mean the morning show?
Yeah, the one it was because it was on in the summer, right? Was it?
Right.
The morning show. Yes. I remember watching that and I was excited about the late night show, and I watched that first episode and it changed everything for me. And so you are a part of changing everything for me. So I thank you for that.
That's great. I'm glad that I was able to facilitate that.
Well, I appreciate all of it, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Well, this has been lovely, and as you were, as they say.
As you were, yes, as you were. Thank you. Thanks so much, Merrill. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Okay, bye. That was nice. Jason?
That was incredible. This is Pat.
Oh, thanks, Pat.
That was so good.
Yeah. Not incredible, though, huh?
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant. Okay.
So.
No, Jason, Pat said incredible. You said so good.
And then I revised to brilliant.
After I flagged it.
Well, I know. Yeah.
And our thanks to Megan Kieser for that.
Yes, exactly.
I thought of her when you originally said that she was booked, and I don't know why. I did not know that Megan had worked with her or knew her at all.
Mm-hmm.
The name just popped into my head for some reason. And then when you were doing the interview and, talking about the connection that they had with each other, I was like, I did like a double take, because I was like, why did my brain do that earlier? I don't know.
Well, Pat, I don't know what's going on in your head, but I do know one thing. You're the best in the biz.
Wow. Thanks.
Have we got any more calls?
We got a full phone bank.
Let's take some calls. Let's take some calls. And I also want to thank everybody who is supporting the show over at Patreon. I appreciate all of it, and it's what keeps the show going. We don't take advertising. We just do that. So you go to patreon.com/thebestshow, and we're sending these stickers out that we have now for people at the $5 or more level of support, and thank you. Thank you. Who do we got? Best Show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Who's this?
This is Bree.
Bree?
Yeah.
Bree, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Grand Rapids, Michigan. Home of?
Yeah.
Home of, you can say it.
Me.
Home of you, that's right.
Yeah.
What's going on, Bree?
You know, home of me and all my friends.
I know you and all your friends? Or it's the home of you and all your friends?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Wow, I'm so glad to have caught you on the cusp of the next hour that you're winded down.
Yeah, well, you got through. Do you have something for the topic? Do you have a sequel that we can do?
Well, I was wondering, are you strictly like keeping it to like movies and TV shows and that?
Bree, we can talk of whatever you want to do is what we're going to do.
Okay, well, what about life? Like, you know, like, what do you think like heaven looks like?
What do I think heaven looks like? That's a good question.
That's a sequel to life.
A sequel to life would be the afterlife. So it'd be like the way they had the show MASH, and then they had a show called After MASH.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be the afterlife. I think the afterlife would be a lot like being at a Barnes and Noble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. You know, Grace Jones did a really cool photo shoot at Barnes and Noble once where she was just barely wearing nothing. And it was really interesting because it felt very out of place. But it was something I aspire to be. So maybe someday. I kind of think of heaven like as it were Switzerland or my own life, but a little different.
A little different how?
I haven't thought that far. I probably would have a better sleep schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And And I could sleep in, but still go to sleep early.
Sure. Well, that sounds like a good version of heaven. Wait, are you asking me about heaven? Do you know something I don't know?
I don't think that I know anything more than anybody else. I'm just very normal.
Sure. How's your December going, Bree? How are you handling things?
It's all right. I'm out of work. I'm just hanging out. I like writing a lot too. And, you know, it's pretty topical this evening. It was very cool to hear, the discussion earlier. So yeah, I like writing. I miss work, though, and I have a dog and we're hanging out a lot. Her name is Pashmina. And I think that the best American band is the Beach Boys. And I listen to them in December most of all, probably. What do you think?
All right. That's a good one. Beach Boys are a good one. Pashmina is a good dog name.
Mm-hmm.
Bree, I'm going to sign off on everything you said. Home run.
Oh. How am I doing?
How are you doing? You did it. You did a great job. Great call.
Oh my gosh, are we done already?
I think we might be. I got all the lines lit up.
Yeah.
I want everybody to be able to get through.
Yeah, I understand. It's important to share time with others.
Sure. But you can call back any week.
Oh yeah, I'll try again sometime, you know. Okay. My friends, it's my first time listening to the best show, and I found out you could call in, and I said, I'm going to call in. And so I went back to my room because I live with my friends. And then I said, I'll be back. But I don't think they knew that I was going to be back like this. And well, I'm going to walk into that room right about now, and I'm going to tell them I told you. I told you.
Go tell them you told them. You see, what did I say? I did it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much. You have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye. All right. Give me another call, Pat. Another call.
Hello?
Hello. Hi. Welcome to the best show. Who's this?
Hey, Tom. This is Joseph from Manhattan. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Joseph from Manhattan. What part of Manhattan?
All the way up in Inwood.
Okay. Where's that?
It's around like 190th, 191st. It's a little bit north of Washington Heights.
Okay.
Jabbar.
And how are you doing? How are you coping?
Oh, hanging in there, just, trying to get through this last, full work week before I can take some days off for the holidays, which I'm very lucky to do. And, just looking forward to that.
Are the Pret a Manger's holding up, or how are they doing during this quarantine?
I haven't been south of, say, 180th Street in months, and there aren't any there, but just knowing the city spirit, I would assume that they're doing okay.
Do you enjoy Pret a Manger? You like to walk in and then you get something? Is that the way you do it, or you look down on stuff like that?
Oh, no, I like that. When I used to take the trains from Penn Station, and when I'll take them again, it was nice to just grab a sandwich there at the last second before the train left.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. That one Pret a Manger in Penn Station.
Oh yeah. It was,
what do you got for me tonight, my friend?
Well, Tom, I had a sequel idea.
Okay.
It's based on a terrible movie. Sometimes terrible movies, there are at least one or two elements that really stick out as something that sticks out. Something sticks out as exceptional in your mind. And I'm picking the terrible movie from 1989, No Holds Barred, starring Hulk Hogan. And my idea was throughout this movie, Hulk Hogan played pretty much himself, under the name Rip. And Rip was a wrestling champion, but instead of being really contracted to a wrestling company, he was contracted to a television network, and in walks another television network's executive, the evil Mr. Brell, who was played by the great character actor Kurt Fuller, and he had seen headlines about how great that Hulk Hogan's character Rip was, and he decided he needed to have him for his network, and he even had a few meetings with Rip. And this was just a terrible movie, as Hulk Hogan was the star in it. But this one character, Mr. Brell, the actor Kurt Fuller realized the movie he was making and just played it over the top as much as he could. And just every sentence full of hatred and spit and vitriol. And it was just hilarious. And eventually he would challenge Hulk Hogan with his own monster wrestler played by the late, great Tiny Lister, who died last week. And, this was a terrible movie, but I wanted to do a spinoff based on this one character, Mr. Brell, and to see how after he met his defeat at the end of this episode, he sought revenge on Hulk Hogan. I would think that because he had resources as being such a powerful television executive, he had money and was able to afford, time machine that was able to go forth in the future. And then as this character Hulk Hogan played was so close to Hulk Hogan in real life, he'd be able to see all the horrible things that Hulk Hogan ended up doing, such as the sex tape, the racism, and the automobile accident that he had provided his son the beer for.
Caller, I'm so sorry to do this. This is Pat in the studio, and we just temporarily lost Tom via our connection. So stand by, and we will try to patch him through. I'm sorry you just did that whole story about this. And
no, it was a great story. If you have more details, we could hear more details while we bring Tom back into the fold here.
Really what this is the character played by Kurt Fuller.
Am I back?
Yes.
You were back.
We're back?
Oh, yes. I believe so. What's the last thing that you heard?
What is that audio?
It happens at times.
Tom, can you hear the caller?
Hello?
Hey, can you hear us?
I can.
Can you hear the caller?
Try talking, caller.
Let me see. Caller?
Can you hear me?
I heard that. Let me see. Okay, talk now.
Hello, this is Joseph from Manhattan.
Hey, Joseph, how are you? Sorry about that.
Oh, that's quite all right.
A little technical difficulty.
No problem whatsoever. I understand it. Having to be on these Zoom calls all the time. I know they drop in and out all the time. Mm-hmm. What was the last thing that you heard me say?
You were talking about, I don't know, it just started making sounds and then it was gone.
Okay, very quickly, I wanted a sequel based on the one good element in the terrible Hulk Hogan movie from 1989. No Holds Barred. It was an television executive played by the great character actor Kurt Fuller. And
yes, the great Kurt Fuller who played Mr. Brell or Krell, right?
Yeah. Brell, that's right. Yes.
Mr. Brell. I remember I've seen that movie more times than a good movie that I should. I've seen No Holds Barred so many times. The Hulk Hogan wrestling movie where he plays Rip Randolph.
I think he's Rip Thomas.
Rick Thomas?
Rip Thomas, yes. Rip him.
Rip Thomas, are we sure?
I could be wrong, but when Tiny Lister died last week, I went back and I watched it. And Randolph, his brother's name was Randy. That might be what you're thinking of.
Okay, well, let's see. Now I have to check.
It could be Randy Randolph.
It just says Rip on IMDb. We're not going to worry about it. And also, yes, the passing of Tiny Lister. He was a great, funny actor, and it's very sad. So what's the sequel?
This is a spinoff of Mr. Brell, because at the end of No Holds Barred, as you know, there's that scene where Mr. Brell starts ripping out the controls in the television control room because he doesn't want, I suppose, the worldwide audience to see Hulk Hogan's rip beating his guy, Tony Lister, Zeus. And because of him ripping out the controls, he gets electrocuted, and we assume that he's dead. So in the sequel, he's not dead. He lives, and he wants revenge on Hulk Hogan's character. And as he has resources as a powerful television executive, I don't know, maybe he obtains access to some time travel and is able to go forward. And since the Rip character was so close to Hulk Hogan's character, he would be able to find out the horrible things that Hulk Hogan did in real life in the future, such as the racism, the sex tape, you name it. And then he'd be able to bring down the Rip or Hulk Hogan character, therefore finally gain some measure of revenge since Rip turned him down from joining the network.
Well, my friend, I got to say, you just, that's a game changer. You added time travel into the No Holds Barred universe now has time travel as an element of it, which is, that's an impressive conceit. And you've made Hulk Hogan and Rip are one and the same. I got to say, 5 stars.
They pretty much are one and the same. I just want some redemption, Tom, because this this man, Hulk Hogan, this was my childhood hero. And, you know, maybe I had blinders on, but I felt so betrayed when the racist comments came out that I don't know, I have many years to work back of the debt of this man being my childhood hero. And I just, I know it would be nice to have Mr. Brell have revenge on him.
Who would have thought that Hulk Hogan would turn out to be weird trash? Who could have seen that? None of us.
Most people could have, but as a little kid, you know, and having those glasses on.
Yes.
Like a superhero to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got your revenge tonight. Well, thanks for the call, buddy.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Pat? Best show.
Hey, Tom. It's David from D.C.
David from D.C. What's up, David?
Not too much. I got a sequel for the topic.
What do you got?
So I've thought this through a few times in the past because I always come back to this movie because it's one of my favorite movies. But the what would a sequel to my favorite movie, Boogie Nights, look like? And mm-hmm. I have kind of two scenarios, I think. I could, you know, if PTA wanted to take it down that path.
Okay, yeah, you could. I like that you're showing the respect for him and allowing him to consider your sequel ideas to his idea.
If I were to propose it to him, and sure. Obviously if he wanted to take a break from the Bradley Cooper thing coming up is.
Yeah. Okay, give me the deets. What do you got for your Boogie Nights sequel?
So I think, you know, there's kind of two paths I could see. One would be, you know, the future of Dirk Diggler, you know, going into the, you know, further into the 80s to the 90s. And I kind of thought about, I mean, the last caller was talking about Hulk Hogan, so I'll bring up another disgusting person that kind of inspires my thought. But, you know, kind of taking like, you know, what if he took, you know, kind of the Ron Jeremy path where he's trying to be in like more mainstream movies and making appearances and like, you know, B-list movies in the 90s.
Sure. You know, being kind of, just like a funny character who'd pop up in one scene of like Married with Children.
Exactly. Right. I mean, you know, if he, you know, and then, you know, maybe eventually he takes the reality show route, you know, he does the surreal life and those types of things. But, you know, kind of maybe playing up a comedic, you know, goofy appearance side.
Okay.
And then the other, you know, the other path would be, and, you know, the movie kind of takes in this direction, I guess, already, but with the other guys, you know, what do they do when they're, you know, leaving the industry and, you know, like with, what's his name? Don Cheadle's character, you know, what happens when Luis Guzman, you know, leaves the industry and tries to find, you know, normal work.
Sure, sure. So you'd follow them through the 80s?
Yeah, you know, maybe.
Into the 90s?
Yeah, maybe, you know, Luis Guzman, you know, tries to get into some sort of, you know, Wall Street type thing and, you know, tries to kind of build, I mean, maybe kind of reel that in with like a Wolf of Wall Street type thing where he tries to kind of make it big on Wall Street and then, you know, hiding his past identity. Or I guess Julianne Moore is already doing other things in the movie, but, or, you know, with Roller Girl, you know, kind of like, you know, kind of where are they now, essentially?
Sure. And you want more. You feel like you want more. You need to see what happens to these characters. You feel that there are unanswered questions.
I think there's a, I mean, they kind of, I guess at the end of the movie show, you know, Julianne Moore's character is like directing and, Don Cheadle has his business, but they're, you know, I think one of the things I love about the movie is just kind of the, you know, more minor characters and, you know, what happens with Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, what happens with Luis Guzman's character. I don't really remember them kind of exploring that. So I think there is a little bit of a.
Well, look, I got to say this. I think you and I have to get in a room with Paul Thomas Anderson and pitch him this.
I would be honored.
All right.
I think there's stories left to be told here.
Dudio, set it up.
And I don't know if Dudio can hear this, but actually I wanted to say Dudio's, I can't remember the W something, but his radio program stuff he's been doing is, I love it. So I don't know if he can hear that, but.
I hope he didn't. I hope he didn't hear.
I did. Thank you very much.
It's been keeping me entertained.
Now, for people, Jason has been doing some radio shows like he did because he was a classic rock DJ in West Virginia, and he swore that if Joe Biden won, is that what it was?
Yeah, if Joe Biden took Georgia and Pennsylvania, I would do a classic rock show again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the first one was so much fun, I did a second one.
But he didn't take those states.
That is true. I mean, we'll find out more on January 6th, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much more you need to find out, but,
when the real electors show up.
The real electors show up. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very healthy version of the planet right now with people still digging in on a strange alternate reality that is immediately disprovable, but they are fully committed to believing every part of how things aren't. It's great. We got another call. Hello, Best Show.
Hey, Tom, this is Zippy from Parts Unknown.
That's right, Zippy from Parts, and that's when we rebranded. This is one of the people that got rebranded as a because he was a snooze, and then now he's exciting. What was your previous caller name?
My name was Cody.
Cody from where?
Massachusetts.
From Massachusetts, and you got rebranded as Zippy from Parts Unknown.
Yeah, I've kept it. It's really caught on.
I love it. So, Zippy, what do you got for me?
So, I've got a sequel idea. I don't have it all completely fleshed out yet. I was kind of hoping we could workshop it. It's for E.T.
Okay.
Remember last year when they had that holiday commercial for Xfinity when they brought back E.T. and Elliot?
I don't know. I don't know that commercial.
That's okay. I just wanted to see. But I bought a VHS of E.T. recently, and it was just in front of me when I saw what the topic was going to be. So I thought, the sequel could be E.T. 2 or just called ETC or et cetera.
I like that. I like that. So what do you think would happen in an E.T. sequel? Home planet?
Home planet. I've been on the E.T. ride in Universal Studios. It really brought that home, literally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a multiverse type scenario, like maybe Ready Player One-ish.
Sure. What if we spice it up a little bit and keep it in the Spielberg world where E.T. fights the gremlins?
Is there water on E.T.'s planet?
Well, E.T. comes back to Earth and he helps Gizmo, and then E.T. and Gizmo fight the gremlins. E.T. 2, Gremlins 3 is what it, what it would be.
Lewis Batch? No, we don't go. What would the Gremlins subtitle be? I don't know. ETC is probably the title, et cetera.
ETC, ETC, Gremlins 3.
Perfect.
I like it. And I'm glad you're, how much you pay for that VHS copy of ET? Let me see if I can guess.
$8.99.
How much?
Oh, sorry. $8.99.
What are we? You got a Rockefeller here on the line?
$800? No, $8.99.
Oh, no, I knew that. I'm just saying it's also a VHS of E.T. You're still throwing around $9 on that.
Hey, it was worth it for this reboot idea. I mean,
I'm not saying it wasn't worth it. I'm just saying you're living a fancy life. You got the E.T. VHS tape. You got your Grey Poupon out.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you, Zippy, for the call. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you for
the. There we go. I love it. Thank you for the what?
I'm learning, Tom.
Yeah, I love it, Pat. We got another call. Best Show. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the Best Show.
Hi. Sorry, I had you on speaker.
Oh, that's okay. Who's this?
Simon from
Simon. From Ontario?
Yes.
How are things in Ontario right now?
They're all right.
Cold?
Too bad. Yeah, you got some of that.
All right. So what do you got for me, my friend?
Yeah, so I'm pitching a sequel. It was, the original movie was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Sure.
And basically I'm pitching an anthology movie series in which we pit different American presidents against different mythological creatures.
Okay.
And the specific one, I'm having Teddy Roosevelt fight Bigfoot.
So you want historical figures fighting mythical creatures?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And you want Teddy Roosevelt to fight Bigfoot?
Bigfoot, yeah.
Okay. And who do you want to win? Do the humans win every one of the fights?
Well, we can mix it up, but basically, and the script's still loose on this. I want him to have two quotes. I want him to get thrown against the tree by the Bigfoot, and it looks like maybe he's down, but then he says, speak softly and carry a big stick, and then he picks up a stick and gets back in the fight.
Sure.
And say, it takes more than that to kill a bull moose, and that's the only two lines I'm wanting to say.
All right. Well, look, you got to start with the poster. A lot of times that's what they say. Start with the poster. And that's what you're doing. You're starting with the poster.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like it sounds maybe not as good as Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, but that's fine.
I have another. We could do JFK.
And who would JFK square off against?
Well, the movie title would be JFK : Ghost Protocol. It's the ghost of JFK.
So JFK fights his own ghost?
No, he fights other ghosts as a ghost.
So the ghost of JFK, well, look, you have to also realize Teddy Roosevelt is a ghost as well. They're all ghosts.
Yeah, but he was taken in his time.
Sure. So you want the ghost of JFK to fight other, like what, an evil ghost?
Yeah. And perhaps he comes back in later movies. He assists other presidents.
Okay. Okay. I like it. Look, I think you're onto something, my friend. see if you can get one of those Canadian film grants.
Yeah, they don't do those anymore.
They don't?
I don't think so. That was when we had money.
Yeah. Back then we had cash and hope.
Yep. Now we have just...
a whole lot of nothing. All right. Thanks for the call, my friend.
Bye.
Bye. Any other calls, Pat? How many other calls we got?
I told these last two to make it quick.
That's right. Thank you. Pat, I tell you, Pat, you couldn't be doing it more right. Best show.
The Natural Part 2.
The Natural Part 2.
Yeah.
Well, who's this, first of all? You sound like somebody who's a little comfortable, and that throws me a little bit.
It's Pat from Philly. We don't know each other, but we have mutual affiliations, kind of.
Okay. Well, Pat, you want to do The Natural 2. What happens in The Natural 2?
I don't even know why I think this is funny. I've been listening to the show. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
And I just keep thinking of The Natural Part 2. We bring back Robert Redford. Bring back Duvall, and maybe they strip his World Series away because there was a gambling issue, so he didn't have his title, and now we've got to come back again.
He's got to do it all over again. Roy Hobbs has to do it all over again.
Right.
Well, why doesn't he just sign with the Phillies? Why don't you do that? Natural 2, Philly style.
Right, Philly style.
Yeah,
Gritty could make an appearance, and Gritty could maybe fight the Fanatic or something like that.
Why would Gritty fight the Fanatic?
I think Gritty, because he could be Gritty, Tom.
He's Gritty fans. That's a weird lot, I got to tell you. It makes you anti. I mean, you're from Philly. You're from Philly, and you're anti-Fanatic?
No, I like the Fanatic just fine.
But you love Gritty.
I like Gritty. But I mean, I would pick the Fanatic. Like, if I had to invite one person to a party, it'd be the Fanatic. Just because he's put the time in.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's what I just want. Just as long as you have respect for, they get all these people, they just, these newcomers. And they're just like, oh yeah, the Philly Fanatic sucks. Gritty rules. It's like, there's room for both.
That's not fair. I will say, when Gritty first came on, I was just like, I don't know. But then a day later, I was like, okay, I'm into Gritty. Like, you have to kind of be into Gritty, right, Tom? It's pretty good.
I mean, look, I get the appeal. I mean, I get the appeal. But people could have just as easily turned on Gritty as they embraced Gritty.
Sure. We've said Gritty a lot.
The Nets had mascots, and they ran out. They ran him out of town. They ran out those mascots. They were Gritty quality.
I mean, is there anything funnier than Mr. Met?
Yeah, with the giant baseball
hat with that baseball head.
Yeah,
and the little hat on it. Mm-hmm. He's got the little hat on.
Yeah. All right, buddy. I like the call. I like the cut of your jib. Have a great night. Okay. Final call.
I thought we had one for the topic.
Who's this?
This is Woody in Rochester, New York.
Woody in Rochester, New York. What's going on tonight, Woody?
Not so much. Just doing some painting.
Whoa, what are you painting?
My job, we're moving into a new space, and it's kind of a crunch. It was an opportunity to move into a bigger space.
Crunch? You moved into a Crunch Fitness?
Yeah, we moved into a Crunch Fitness, and we got to get all the logos off and all that kind of stuff, because it's not
sure.
Deal, you know, yeah.
No, I got you. So what can I do for you, Chief?
I got one for the topic, Tom. I got a sequel to the movie The Conversation.
The Francis Ford Coppola movie The Conversation, starring Gene Hackman.
Yeah. And if you remember, in The Conversation, Gene Hackman is a saxophone player, in addition to being a surveillance expert.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, like, you know, after the sequel would be that it's now it's later on in the 70s, and he really gets into the burgeoning, like, punk scene, and he starts, like a punk band where he's, like, the punk saxophone player, a la, like, you know, like, X-Ray Specs, like, that kind of thing.
Sure. No, what's his name? Harry?
Harry Call.
Harry Call starts playing saxophone for different Bay Area punk bands.
Right.
Like, what do you picture him getting up and playing with who would he play with? Dead Kennedys?
He could play with Dead Kennedys. I mean, sure. I mean, Holiday in Cambodia, that's begging for some sweet sax licks, I think.
I gotta say. What's your name again? Curly? What is it again?
It's Woody.
Woody. Woody, that's a great idea.
He just pops in. He's just like that weird old guy in the punk band that nobody knows where they came from.
Yeah. Trench coat.
Yeah. Oh, trench coat for sure.
Old trench coat's rolling in. People are just like, what's trench coat up to?
But he won't even tell us where he lives. He's really paranoid.
Yeah. No. He always records the shows though.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Yeah. He's got some amazing real technology.
Yeah. Like, maybe that's where it starts. Conversation 2, he's just like at a punk show and he's like a taper. He's in the audience taping the show.
Oh yeah. He's got a very bulky trench coat.
Yeah.
Got his equipment in there.
Yeah. And somebody's like, you taping our show, man?
Like, who's that guy with the parabolic mic?
Yeah. At the back of the club in a trench coat. Well, Skippy, I got to say, you just cracked it open.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking my call so late.
Have a grand evening.
You do.
I got to end it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Pat, anything? That's it?
That's it for calls. We're locked.
Good. That we're locked, and we did it. And another one's in the book, and I thank all of you for listening, and we'll be back with another show next week. Hopefully some surprises for you next week. And I say to you good night. And I'll play a little something as we head on out, and we'll see you next week. Thanks to Forever Dog and to Brett for all the help. And thanks to Jason and Pat, and we'll be back next week. So sit back for 6 hours and 26 days and 21 hours and don't move, and we'll be back. Thanks for listening. I don't even have anything queued up to play. I'm just saying good night. Good night.